everybody. So we are starting this meeting of Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. We are going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. So if we could all rise and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean-Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
14 members present.
All right. Next up is presentation of proclamations. We do have a proclamation tonight, and it is a proclamation honoring Tompkins County Poets Laureate. Now, there's one person who's done quite a bit of work on this, so I want to invite Amanda Champion up here to read the proclamation and to deliver it, or I can bring it to you, either way. I'll bring it to you.
Thank you all for coming. We want to celebrate our many years of honoring Poets Laureate in Tompkins County, and we have a proclamation today. Whereas appointing a Poet Laureate is a long-standing tradition for many governments around the world. Whereas Poets Laureate are vital members of our community as they offer inspiration, create greater awareness of the art of poetry, and promote access to poetry for everyone, no matter the background, culture, or beliefs of our community members. And whereas Tompkins County recognizes the importance of having a Poet Laureate to serve the community. And whereas since 2002, 9 Poets Laureate have been appointed in Tompkins County, each serving 2-year terms. And whereas these Poets Laureate have connected with and engaged the community in myriad ways, from penning poems for events, offering workshops at the public library, working with inmates at the county jail, creating weekly poetry mailings, publicly reading their work, and more. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this legislature is deeply grateful for the ongoing work the Poets Laureate do for all the people of Tompkins County. Resolved further that today we celebrate our Poets Laureate by dedicating a plaque, which is hanging on the wall, displayed in legislature chambers to honor all our past, present, and future Poets Laureate. And we look forward to continuing this esteemed tradition for many years to come. Thank you. And this is Melissa Tucky, our current Poet Laureate, and she's going to do a reading.
Hello, and thank you so much on behalf of past, present, and future Poet Laureates. This is such an honor for us, and it's already an honor to serve the county as a Poet Laureate, and we thank you for bringing us together. I'm just going to say a couple of words and recite a short poem. We want to thank you for honoring poetry and poets in our county with the Poet Laureateships and this plaque. Poets work alone, but poetry is not solitary. They write from their lived, embodied experiences and from imagination, but poems are not private. They are public and communal expressions of language. They are an invitation to the reader or listener to collaborate in the making of meaning and the creating of a shared culture. When politics deadens language and dehumanizes others, poets remind us of our shared humanity. And it is a dangerous and divisive time in our country, part of our history. We're always in this time. we're really in it now. And poetry is an important connection that we can make with each other across class, across culture, across race, across nationality, across borders. It connects us. I'm just going to recite a short poem from one of my favorite poets, a forebearer, one of our ancestors now, June Jordan. These poems are things that I do in the dark, reaching for you, whoever you are, and are you ready? These words are stones running on across water. These skeletal lines are desperate arms of my longing and love. I am a stranger learning to worship the strangers around me. Whoever you might be, whoever I might become. That's June Jordan. And thank you. Thank you for celebrating poetry.
Very much for that, and congratulations. And congratulations on the plaque. We'd love to get a picture of the poet laureate with the plaque at some point during the meeting, so somebody can take charge of that. Martha?
I wonder if all the past poets laureate who are here could stand up and just tell us who they are, because not everybody knows.
Thank you, Martha.
Microphone, please. Microphone.
And I am a poet.
I'm Catherine Howard Mahon.
I'm Jack Hopper, and thank you.
I'm Zia Zahava. Hello, and thank you all.
I'm Jay Leeming. Thank you very much.
And our first poet laureate over there is Michelle Courtney Berry, a.k.a. Leslyn McBean Claiborne, a.k.a. Shelley Michelle Nunn. I can go on. That's my girl over there.
Did they get a group photo?
I think that'd be great if you guys...
We did.
They already took it.
Already did? Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming on a cold night. And thank you very much for the poetry. Congratulations. Moving on, we have no announcement of executive sessions. Reordering of business, I think we're all set. And special orders of the day, I think we're okay on that as well. We're going to move right on to privilege of the floor. So the public. I have about three blue cards. So we're going to start to which Josh Friedman. I think you all know him from the town of Trumansburg. If you don't know him, you should get to know him. There you go. Go ahead, Josh.
Thanks. I wanted to just talk a little bit about the conference center. And I want to urge you to support building and supporting this conference center. Both as a resident, I'm a member of the Strategic Tourism and Planning Board, sitting on both the Planning and Evaluation Committee and the Budgeting Committee, as well as the Arts and Culture Committee. I'm also a business owner in Trumansburg, where I own two small businesses, and I was the former executive director of the Hangar Theater for 5 years. I see this as a plan that only benefits the community and will build on the investment in the infrastructure that both the public and the private sector have built over this past decade. Conferences are going to bring people to town. It's going to increase our hotels and our restaurants. We know that. Other people may talk about that. What I really want to talk about is just how this investment and the commitment is going to help, what it's going to mean to our greater community, our nonprofits, and our businesses outside of the city. conferences bring people, they provide a lot of people with the opportunity to explore new places. And research tells us that conference attendees often take advantage of their travel to attend arts and cultural events, outdoor recreation opportunities. They want to visit the museums and the galleries and the historic sites in town. The Convention and Visitors Bureau will, I think, have great luck in attracting people and also encouraging people to extend their trip, helping to increase Ithaca as a center for people to go out and do their regional wine tours, their farm tours, and other things that they're doing. I think there's a great opportunity with the amenities that we have here to encourage people to bring their families with them in conferences. We've got a lot in place that will not only that will help with all of this, and it's going to really help with the nonprofits, the museums, the theaters, the farmers markets, the concert venues. These people are so easy to market to. They're right there, right? We always use, you know, everybody's favorite marketing tool is this quarter card. You hand somebody a card. It's the best thing in the world. You can only do that with the kind of conference attendees where you've got a lot of people coming in at one time and an easy way to reach all of those people. As hotel rooms have increased, as our supply has increased, our bed and breakfasts and our smaller hotels outside of the county have seen some drop off there. This demand will help and make it feel like those college weekends again, where, and that helps Trumansburg and Lansing and Dryden. We can keep those hotels full. And lastly, the direct spending is fantastic, but also the tax money that will be generated, and especially the room tax, and our ability to continue to invest in arts and culture and all the other great things that that does. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Josh. We have another speaker, Steve Hedrick. He resides in Tompkins County, and he is representing the Downtown Ithaca Alliance.
Hi, Steve. Hi. Good evening. As Mike said, my name is Steve Hedrick. I've served on the Downtown Ithaca Alliance since 2011, and I'm terming out this year. I've been their president for the last 6 years. And the reason I bring up this timeline is that the Conference Center has been an important part of the Downtown Ithaca strategic plan going back since before I was on the board, since our 2020 plan that was designed in 2010. This Conference Center is a key piece of the portfolio downtown. It will have economic effects not only downtown in the city, but also out into the surrounding counties. This is an important plan that we would encourage you to support. It's definitely a partnership between downtown, between the county, between the city, and I would encourage these three entities to work together to get this project going. Other things I'd like to mention is that our Downtown Alliance has also recently passed a resolution of support for this project. There's a lot of moving pieces. There are a lot of moving pieces in making this happen, and we're trying to take this one opportunity at a time to try to get this project to go. Downtown's gone through a tremendous resurgence in the last 10 years. There's been a tremendous amount of development. We think this is a key piece for downtown and for the surrounding area. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Steve. Our next speaker is Kelly Cartmill. She is from Lansing, and she's representing Kilpatrick's.
I'm actually from Ithaca, but that's okay. good evening. I am Kelly Cartmill. I'm the chair of the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, and I'm here, obviously, to encourage you to support the Conference Center. Our county's tourism program has been very successful over the years and is unique for several reasons. Our occupancy tax revenues currently help sustain and support many assets in our county, which in turn improves the quality of life we have grown to enjoy in Tompkins County. These dollars give back to our local communities through various streams in which your constituents benefit. The time has come to take a bold step in support of a project that will have significant economic impact to our county as a whole. Of course, I understand the belief that only hotels will benefit, but that is simply not true, and ignorant of our current tourism program's strategic vision and goals. Our tourism tax revenues currently support over 80 grantees a year, including but not limited to areas of parks and recreation, arts and culture, festivals, agriculinary tourism, community celebrations. All tourism-related assets would feel significant impact, including restaurants, shops, theaters, museums, outdoor recreation, transportation that includes the new Ithaca and the new Tompkins County Airport, and local and intercity bus service, to just name a few. We have seen great success in this program over the past few years. Through return on investment, community support for the investments made through this program, and by the growth of the tourism industry and overall growth in the room tax revenues. As a county-appointed board, our mission includes providing oversight and strategic direction for tourism initiatives that promote economic development. The Conference Center project achieves this mission. Now is the time to find ways to grow the room tax and continue making the county tourism program vibrant and sustainable. And on a side note, as a local restaurateur, we need to really look at the effects tourism has on local business. It should be noted that over the last few weeks, many of us go dark from the lack of business, from College Town to Aurora Street to the waterfront and all other areas of the county. This all trickles down to our staffing, local vendors, and overall sales tax revenues. When we lack visitation, we struggle with only local support. On average, our business revenues can increase anywhere from 50 to 65% week over week when visitation goes back up. The simple fact is, visitors spend money, and we need more visitors in our local businesses to survive. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. We have one more speaker that's signed up, Jennifer Carius and Town of Ithaca, and she would like to speak on leadership. Yes.
Yes. Thank you all for your service. You do great jobs. I have been a little out of the loop, but was watching the video from the last session, kind of looking for something else there, and came upon the leadership discussion. So a couple of things just come to mind as someone who advocates for democracy reform, both inside and outside of my own party, the Democratic Party. Just a couple questions. From what I saw, leadership, former leadership, Martha, was forming together with a couple of other senior members of the legislature, or more senior members of the legislature, together with the entire Republican caucus in order to form a coalition for Anna's leadership. That against the Democratic majority otherwise of the other seven legislators, it just made me wonder a couple of things. Why would that be in a county where Democratic Party unity is stressed in other contexts? Secondly, and that caused me concern as a Democrat, actually, that the coalition should have to be formed in that way, and thereby creating a division within the Democratic Party caucus for the county legislators. Then I was wondering, why would one want to serve in leadership in a situation like that? And then lastly, I'll say, why would someone want to serve in leadership, not being willing to take the vice chairship? And a couple of things came to mind. Les Lynn, being Claiborne's, came to mind as a person senior and probably has support on both sides of the aisle for leadership. I thought I would put that forward. And this is an issue of great public concern, in my view, of someone who cares about process and honesty and not strong-arming another person to have a great government, which you all have been doing a good job at. I think this leadership issue could be critical. And lastly, I would say, I think I don't understand why the vice chair formally is not being considered for the chairship. As someone peripheral, I would put that forward, Shauna's name and Deborah's name and a couple other people who are newer but very capable. Why is our current and recent leadership not supporting new leadership is my question. And thank you all for considering that and coming toward a great decision on that tonight or soon.
All right. Thank you very much, Jennifer. We now move on to municipal officers. I do see a few municipal officers in the room. Savante, I see you back there, man. Do you want to say something?
Thank you. Good to see everybody. I apologize. I'm losing my voice, so I'll keep it very brief. I do want to say that in the City Hall betting pool, I had Mike Sigler as chair, and it made thousands of dollars as a result.
You can put it towards Cass Park. There you go. Yes.
The interim chair has done a wonderful job representing the county, at least at the city level. We've been able to work well over the last couple of weeks about our shared priorities. I'll also just say that I'm really here for the discussion on the conference center. I can't thank you enough for considering it. The folks who spoke before me said it better than I ever could. I want to join the folks as they give a presentation about the conference center, but just say that this seems to be a project that is very, very important for the small business owners who are struggling to bring people into their stores, and is a great opportunity for us to diversify our economy. And I think you all know that the base of our economy is education, and that is a healthy base and a strong base. But unless we have a more diverse economy, we will have we'll still have a tale of two cities, right, where some folks are doing very well in our community and other people are locked out of economic opportunity. And will remain precarious. Something happens and suddenly folks don't feel the investment in education is worthwhile or even attainable. And a downturn in enrollment could mean a downturn in the quality of life for residents all over our county. So why would we want to bring tourists in? That's a big, to my thinking and to the thinking of the City of Ithaca's comprehensive plan, diversifying our economy is the way to do that. So, again, I just want to be brief because I want to join the presentation, but I'll ask if there are any questions about anything happening in the city.
I would be shocked if there were not. So, please, Rich, go ahead.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Mayor. At our last meeting, Duxon was speaking and indicated that there is a transition going with the streetlights from NYSEG to the city. And I had asked him what kind of timeline we were looking at, because I've had requests from constituents about what's happening with their lights.
Sure.
Love to be able to tell him.
Okay. And he didn't know? Okay. If he knew and I didn't, that would be a problem. Let me find the final answer for you. The complete turnover should happen in the early part of this year, and once we own it, we can start installing new lights right away, which is our intention, is to move to LED lights. And we've been very cautious about the literature saying that blue light spectrums are bad for people's health, so we're going to use much warmer spectrums when we do that. We intended to do that work in the warm parts of this year. Let me get an actual timeline for you, and I'll forward it along.
Thank you.
Sean.
Thank you, Mayor, for showing up at our meeting tonight.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
I was wondering if there are any updates on the LEED program.
LEED, yes and no. So Chief Nair, Travis Brooks, and I are going to Seattle on Monday so that we can meet with other folks who have established LEED nationwide. As you might know, the RFP that we sent out came back with no takers. We've adjusted that RFP. I think you actually helped send some amendments. And we sent it to the two folks that we think are most likely to be interested. One is STAP and one is REACH. Turns out they're still not interested. So we're hoping that next week in Seattle, the Chief, Travis, and I will see some examples around the country. Folks who are able to do this maybe with a lower overhead cost, maybe by having the administration actually run inside the police department so that we don't have to contract with a different agency. But yeah, we're in a holding pattern right now.
Yeah, of course. I have Anna, then Martha.
If you want to come to Seattle. We do have one more slot open. We've got
Same
Scout. It's being supported by grant funding, so. And we have one more slot. Okay, we'll talk. Okay.
That was all spread around. One of the questions that came up recently, I don't remember if it was Duck or George that we asked that question of, but was with respect to dredging. I'm pretty sure the first one right now is focused on Cascadilla. I had heard the material would be then deposited at the site where City Harbor is going to be for for de-wetting. Do you have any updates on what that process is, how far up Cascadilla, whether Fall Creek is there, the dredging facility, any kind of those updates?
Yes. So the sediment management facility, where we're actually depositing this stuff, is going to be back behind Walmart. So if you walk just off the railroad tracks, you'll see it. It's about the size of a football field. It's empty now. It's clear. It's near the jungle, so it's near some of the outdoor homeless encampments. The timeline, I could get you the timeline, too. We are starting with Cascadilla, and then the state intends to go as deep out into the inlet as they can. But it's Cascadilla first, and then the inlet. And I believe the funding, we have enough funding to do something like 250,000 cubic square feet, somewhere near there. We believe we need to dredge 700,000 square feet.
Martha.
Thanks for coming. I think you have to chair another meeting at 6 o'clock.
6:30. I got it.
6:30. Okay. All right. Appreciate your being here. Two questions. One is about the parking initiative and the study, and I know that you had staff turnover. We'd love to know, because when Pete Mesmer came, came to a committee, I can't remember where he came and said, it was to the IDA, I think. He said, we're going to move quickly on a study, and that was months ago. And so we're anxious about that. Also about, Bill Goodman, the deputy supervisor of the town of Ithaca, is here. Hope you guys can really get together and figure out how to keep the post office downtown.
Yeah.
It's like one of my little pet things. I think it's really critical to a thriving downtown. So.
Yeah, I agree, too. I want to thank the DIA for passing a resolution encouraging the post office to stay downtown. The city council next month will take up a similar resolution, which I expect to pass. And we hope to communicate to the folks who have control over such things, our friends in Congress and the Senate, and of course, the administration of the post office itself, that we'd be happy to work with them to keep them in the heart of town, because it's really important to us. So we did, unfortunately, have some staff turnover. We're hoping to hire the new parking and transportation engineer. We're changing the title a bit, so it's going to be parking and transportation, not just parking, in the next month or two. And the city council did fund money for that parking plan in this capital project. So we expect that the planning will be underway this year. But as I think you know, we haven't waited for the plan to begin or even to wrap up to implement a lot of parking changes, including the DIA's full steam ahead approach for transportation demand management, which is underway.
Okay, great. So are you saying that Congressman Reed might have something to do with the post office? Because he's going to be in Ithaca Thursday.
Is he really? That'd be terrific, yes. Give him my best. And
he's going to a TCAD board meeting. I'm not there, so.
I'll be very honest. The entire process is fairly opaque to me, like who actually makes those calls. But we know that the federal government the post office is a department of the federal government, so we assume if the legislators weighed in, it would help us keep them downtown.
I'll pass it on to TCAD to Mike, who's going to be at that meeting.
Oh, nice.
Any other legislators have any questions? Because I have a question, but anybody else? My question's quick. And it's kind of a softball to you, so you're welcome in advance. We were talking at the meeting we had about construction and how, you know, people downtown, there might be some construction fatigue.
Yeah.
And you actually threw out something I thought was kind of interesting. Like, what is the status of the projects downtown?
Yeah, there is construction fatigue. I could tell you that for sure. And in truth, this is as quiet as it's been downtown in about 8 years. You know, Marriott is now done and the Canopy is done. City Center is done. Seneca Way is done. Frost's amazing project above Old Goat is done. Breckenridge Place is done. And I could go on and on. We've seen, what's the total number of millions of dollars of new investment? About $500 million worth of new investment in downtown Ithaca in the last 8 years. And right now, really the only construction project you have going that's inconveniencing people is Herald Square, and that's racing towards completion in the middle of this year. Yes, if you have construction fatigue, enjoy now, stroll around, and notice that there aren't a lot of cranes, but enjoy it now because the cranes are coming back. Yes, they're coming quickly. If all goes well and we're able to fix and replace our Green Street parking garage with 200 units of subsidized housing and a conference center, and if we're able to then, a few years after that, replace the Seneca Street garage with, I don't know, maybe an inner city bus terminal slash new city hall slash more housing slash parking.
You said half a billion, right?
Half a billion dollars.
You didn't say millions, billion.
Yeah, half a billion.
Well, thank you very much. And if when you get back from Seattle, if somebody could come to maybe Health and Human Services and give them an update on LEED, that would be great.
Oh, sure. Maybe the chief and I could both come. That would be a good. Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for letting me be here.
Thank you, Samantha. As was mentioned, Bill Goodman is here from the town of Ithaca, and he offered already to give an update on the town of Ithaca. So, welcome, Bill.
Good evening, everyone. Addressing you in my new role as deputy town supervisor now. People say I seem to be smiling a lot more lately. I'll just mention a couple of things that I think might be of interest to the legislature, and then happy to answer any questions. We are, the town's continuing to work with our colleagues over in the city on the green building project, the energy code supplement. That draft has been out there for a while now. We were thinking that we might have adopted it by now, but it's probably still going to be 3 or 4 more months to go through the process of, at the city and at the town to get adopted. Just to remind folks, that's to increase the energy efficiency of new construction. And the next phase then that we've both the city and the town have gone together to request a grant from the same place that we got grants from to study the new building, new construction, energy efficiency. We're requesting grants to do a study on how to deal with existing buildings and improving the energy efficiency of existing buildings. So we should know probably around May or June if we get that grant, and then can move forward with that effort. So one thing that the town is doing that Rod Howard, new supervisor, has decided to do is create an ad hoc committee to look at a Green New Deal for the town. And so, of course, the green building projects, the energy efficiency of buildings is one big component of that. But we want to look at what the other items are that the town can work on, both for its own operations and community-wide. And so, as you all know, the city passed a resolution back in the summertime, a Green New Deal for the city. And then I know the county has been working a lot and put a lot of money into their budget for, efforts to address the climate crisis. I'm hoping as the town is working on its Green New Deal committee that we can be in conversations with both the city and the county on ways that we might all work together so that we can all address the climate emergency we're facing. Let's see, trails. One thing that we're continuing to work on is the Gateway Trail. We're trying to figure out the final connection down near the Home Depot area, where eventually the Gateway Trail would connect to the future Black Diamond Trail going through that section. It's turned out to be a lot trickier than we originally thought, but we are I'm hoping getting close to final designs on that, and then hope to get that out to bid so we can actually do the construction on the Gateway Trail this year, and finally open the Bridge to Nowhere, which I was hoping to get open during my 4 years as supervisor, but but I'll still be around as deputy supervisor to help cut the ribbon. Fingers crossed. Something else, other trails, we're continuing to work with the county and others on an extension of the South Hill Trail and the lower stretch of the Black Diamond Trail. So I'm hoping that those efforts will have some come to some fruition in the next year or two. One thing I was hoping also to get done when I was supervisor, and it's hanging on now is short-term rentals. We're still working on our short-term rental legislation. After a couple of meetings and discussions with lots of interested folks this fall, looks like we're sort of adjusting some of the ways we're going to approach it. We're still talking about having initially just trying to regulate unhosted rentals, but we've still keeping a basic time limit of about 29 days over the course of a year. But some of the nuances around that were, it's still kind of up in the air. So that's going to take a couple more months of discussion, I think, before we're ready to actually have a draft that would be ready for a public hearing on. With those brief highlights, I'll be willing to answer any questions you might have.
I see Dan and then Rich.
Yeah, Bill, I wanted to ask about the Green Building Code. Mm-hmm. When you're done with that, to the extent that you can tell, is it going to be easily stealable by the other towns in the county?
Probably. It's set up as an energy code supplement, so it's a supplement to New York State energy code. Additional requirements, so we do have to run it by the New York State Department of State in order to get approval to do something more stringent than what the state energy code requires. So any other town that wanted to do it would have to go through that process as well. One of the things that we've been working on it in conjunction with some. And they're working on something similar in New York City right now, but New York State has been, and NYSERDA has been very interested in what we're doing, because I think that they're hoping once we do adopt something here that they can then shop this around the state as a model for what other municipalities can do.
Very good. Thank you.
Rich?
A couple thank yous. One is thank you for your leadership on trails. I really do hope you get a chance to cut that ribbon.
Yeah.
That's been a long time coming, and that's really an important thing if you can get to the finish line on it. The other thank you is to publicly thank you personally and the town of Ithaca for helping the History Center with its archives. Mm. That was really a great example of a public-private partnership to the good of the community. So, good job.
You're welcome.
Yes, Sean.
Hi, Bill.
Hey.
I just wanted to thank you as well. We received a letter last week from the New York State Department of Transportation in regards to Christopher Lane. I know that the town of Ithaca had submitted a resolution as well as the TE-9A form to request to reduce the speed limit on that road because it should be a school zone. So thank you very much for your hard work on that. Appreciate it.
All right, Martha, yes.
And I'd like to thank you, Bill, for you and Rod entertaining a proposal from the Community Housing Development Fund to support the housing fund. And I'll be going to your meeting on February 24th, I think, to make a proposal. And Megan McDonald is working on that with me. And we really appreciate your consideration of becoming an associate member.
Sure.
Thank you.
If there are any other questions, I'll just mention two other things that some things that I'm going to be continuing working on as deputy, and one is sidewalks in the town. And I know, Shauna, this would be of interest to you, because we've had a lot of requests, and I had an ad hoc sidewalk committee that I was working with, and we're still trying to figure out the creation of sidewalk districts. But I'm going to be continuing to work on that as deputy, because we're focusing on trying to get some sidewalks, particularly right now in Forest Home, and then in the Northeast around the Northeast Elementary School, where we've had a lot of requests for sidewalks. And then another item that I'm going to be continuing to work on as deputy is the sewer treatment plant and the sewer systems, and working with what we call the Group of Six, or sometimes the Gang of Six, which are the six municipalities that all use either the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Facility or the Cuga Heights Wastewater Treatment Facility, and trying to work together intermunicipally on attacking one of the big problems in the sewage area, which is inflow and infiltration, INI, that's trying to stop rainwater, stormwater, groundwater from getting into your sewer pipes and using up some of the capacity in your plants. So that's another big issue that I'll continue to work on. Any other final questions?
All right. Well, thank you, Brad.
Thank you all for your service as well.
Thank you. I also see Robert Lynch from the town of Enfield. Please.
Yes, good evening. I'm Bob Lynch, newly sworn in councilperson for the town of Enfield. We had our organizational meeting for the town of Enfield on the 8th of January. And if you follow the media, you know nothing controversial happened there. For those of you who might not be informed, we decided on a 4-1 vote. I did not support it, but we had a 4-1 vote to take the Pledge of Allegiance out of the meeting order. The concern was raised by a very conscientious council person that there was a problem with the under God reference being a violation of the separation of church and state. There's been some public support for her position. There's also been considerable public pushback, and it's a work in progress, and I guess we're going to have future meetings that probably will write further chapters in that. I can't tell you, but that's where it stands right now. There were some other organizational items that I should mention. We chose to distinguish ourselves from this legislature in that I had proposed that we have a separate privilege of the floor for board members and the supervisor following public privilege of the floor. It got voted down 4-1. They thought that it would take up too much time, and so we who want to talk have to give that 3-minute time limit. We have to obey that 3-minute time limit like everybody else. So I guess that's where we stand. There were also some other changes we proposed to make to relax privilege of the floor, but they did not proceed. Other matters. We are about to undertake building a small solar array adjacent to our town highway barn. It will help power the barn in emergencies. That is, if we can afford a battery power backup for this. Two local firms, Renova Solar and Finger Lakes Renewables, have submitted competing low bids. We're going to be meeting tomorrow night to try to iron them out as to which bid is preferable because there are some differences between them. It's going to be a tough question. And the quotes for the battery backup that would power the highway barn in emergencies are somewhat higher than we'd expected, so we got some tough decisions to make. New board members, myself, and also a very promising young woman named Stephanie Redmond is joining the Enfield Town Board. And Ellen Woods is our newly elected town clerk, replacing the retiring Alice Linton. And beginning Thursday, I'll be joining you on TCOG. So I look forward to talking countywide with representatives of other towns and villages in Tompkins County. And I guess that's it from Enfield.
Any questions for Bob?
Questions?
Come on, one question. Nothing? Right. Thank you very much, Bob.
Yes, Ann.
Oh, Ann?
So is that why you try and come to this meeting, because we don't give you a 3-minute timeline?
I just, of course, I want to find out who's going to be elected chair, because that's interesting. And I also wanted to tell you what some of the things are going on in Enfield. Just like you come to our meetings, I want to come to yours.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Seeing no other municipal officials, I'm going to turn this over to Privilege of the Floor for Legislators. Who wants to go first? Michael.
Well, there they go again. New York State Legislature is in session. And not coin a phrase, but to use a phrase, when the New York State Legislature is in session, no person is safe in his or her property or taxes, I guess. But I want to speak mainly about Medicaid, which has me very upset. We all know that Medicaid is the largest unfunded mandate that our county is subjected to by the state of New York. We are the only state that forces its counties to go to its go to the county real property tax in order to pay a significant share of Medicaid. Somehow all the other states, with the exception of one, I think, makes the counties pay a very small percentage, but somehow all the other states seem to understand that this is a federal and state requirement and that it ought to be paid for by the entity that controls it, and that is the state of New York. We aren't allowed to set the parameters of who's entitled to Medicaid. We're not entitled to decide who we pay for, how much we pay for. We are required to do what the state of New York tells us to do. We are the most expensive state in the union for the cost of Medicaid. That is not because of anything the counties are doing. Governor Cuomo has mentioned in the State of the State speech that maybe the counties aren't holding up their share because of the changes that were made a couple of years ago after decades of trying to get the state to relieve us from this unfunded mandate, decades to try to get what the state finally did was to cap the increase. Didn't take away what we have to pay, basically, which is huge, but it did cap the increase and say the state would pay it. Well, now they're at the end of last session, they began to have second thoughts about that. And again, we are facing that, and I haven't heard exactly what the governor said today, but I kind of suspect I know what he said today, and that is it's local government's fault and not the state's. We do our best with what we have, with what we are allowed to do, with the revenues that we're allowed to look at. But we don't have an income tax. Only the state has a progressive income tax, and it would be the right way for Medicaid to be funded. So stay tuned, but it's going to come back and bite us, I'm very afraid, when we start our budget process this year.
Thank you very much, Michael. Next we have Amanda, then Annie, and then Martha.
Thank you. You all may remember that in the 2019 budget, we funded $1,000 for the Environmental Management Council for the plastic bag ban. And what they've kind of finally got around to doing at the end of last year was putting together an order for these lovely green bags that you all should have in front of you. It says Environmental Management Council. I think they ordered about 700 of them, and these are going to be going to the first set that we're sending out. This is the Waste Reduction Committee of the Environmental Management Council. They're going to have a holder of a giveaway box in all the rural libraries. So if you go into your rural library, you can take a bag. The next step will be, I think we've talked about getting them at the WIC office and the Ithaca Free Clinic. So we're kind of rolling them out in steps to see how fast they go and that sort of thing. We have a couple of members who are going to be restocking them. We also have a big donation from Wegmans of bags, which is great, and also the Lab of Ornithology gave us a lot of bags. So the plan is to get these out to as many low-income people as possible because the ban goes into effect on March 1st, which is coming up very soon. So now you all have a bag. You have no excuse not to use your bag when you go shopping. And thank you for funding all these bags for people in the county. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Annie.
Thank you. I want to follow up first off on what my colleague Mike Lane said about Medicaid. In addition, I concur with what he said, and then in addition, to me, it's similar to how we fund our schools in that you're putting the burden on local municipalities, which can make it very unfair, an undue burden, and it just depending on how much money that municipality has. Schools, you know, we have school budgets that can be higher or lower in different areas, sometimes based on what that municipality can afford. This will be different, I would imagine, when it comes down. It will be not based on what you can afford, so and it could, so it could be like a regressive tax in a way that it hits some counties and some people more than others. The second thing I wanted to talk about was in honor of yesterday being the Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I wanted to read a quote, and it's from when Dr. King was incarcerated in the Birmingham jail, and part of the criticism that was that local officials and state officials and the media, part of the issue that they had with him, they were saying, well, you shouldn't even be here because you're an outsider. And so the quote that I have from his letter addresses that. And one of the reasons why I'm reading that is because we all have a moral responsibility, I believe, to speak out and help correct injustices wherever we see them, whether it's in our backyard, somebody else's backyard. And a lot of times I've seen myself and other people get criticism for that this isn't your area or it's whichever. So the quote is, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Never again can we afford to live with the narrow, provincial, outside agitator idea. Anyone who lives inside the United States can never be considered an outsider anywhere within its bounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Martha?
I'm sensitive to the fact that some people are waiting to do a presentation, but I wanted to update folks a little bit on what we've come up with as a group on lobbying New York State next week. We have a lot of us will be at NYSAC, and we had thanks to those who came last week to a meeting about what should our issues be. And we do at this point have a meeting at 9 o'clock with Chair Gorin from the Senate Local Governments Committee at 9:30 with the Assembly Chair for the Local Governments Committee, that's Fred Thiel. The prime topic on that is the for those meetings, although I think we should certainly cover Medicaid and some other issues, but the prime topic is the airport bonding issue. And thanks to some stuff that Jason dug out and sent to Barbara Lifton's staff this week, we think we have some progress on that issue. But we want to make sure that those committee chairs know what this is about and why it matters and why it should be an easy thing for them to support. We are still waiting to hear about Alcohol and Drug Council. Angela Sullivan's grandfather died, so we're waiting to hear if that's something we should even touch. It can be delicate. On child care, I talked to Charlie Krasanski, Cornell's public affairs person in Albany, and he wrote that OCFS is sort of digging into this. They are working sort of double shift to try to get certification for child care workers. Remember, George McGonigal came here last meeting. And the bottom line is there, so everyone is working on these certificates. he's told that the child care workers can still do their jobs but can't be alone with kids until they get the certification. So this is, it does seem to be a federal requirement that's being administered by the state. So I can, Leslin, send you more information about that. And then there's a couple of issues related to the Lansing Power Plant, working with Mike on that and with Jerry Goodenow. That especially is a topic for the data center, a topic for the second floor, for the governor's office. So those are community college funding is another main issue, HABS funding, et cetera. I'm looking forward to digging into, I looked on the website today about the governor's budget message. There was a ton of great sounding stuff, and then the Medicaid section was down almost at the very bottom. So there's more money for environmental programs, energy, et cetera, a lot of good things. The Medicaid seems to be it could be not too terrible that they, if counties stay under the tax cap, they will and stay under a 3% growth rate in Medicaid. The state will pay the full 3% increase. If the counties don't stay under the tax cap, we're on our own on the increase. If we stay under the tax cap, but growth is more than 3%, which it's a complete misreading that we have any control over that growth. We just administer their rules. If the growth is over 3%, then we have to pay for that. Now I'm
for the amount over 3%.
Right. So we're certainly going to dig into this, find out what NYSAC's position is going to be, and this will be a main issue with the governor's staff. Also, I'm trying to get meetings with the Ways and Means staff on the Senate and Assembly side. I think they would be important. Those would be important audiences to have as well. So, I thank everybody for their input on kind of what the issues ought to be. And we'll, as we get more of this put together, I'll make sure everybody has all the information. And Kathy Covert is working to get meetings with our local delegation to have probably here or maybe in Elmira for Omara, maybe in Lansing for Helming, et cetera. Folks should also know that Jim Seward is retiring. He's not going to be running again, in case anybody missed that. That's the Senate district for the eastern towns, Groton, Caroline, Danby, Dryden, that are represented by Jim Seward. So he's had health issues, and he's not running again. So I think we should still meet with him. We should probably send him a nice card. But we'll be looking for some kind of a change in leadership there.
All right. Thank you, Martha. Any other county legislators like to speak? Anna.
Martha, thank you for the NYSAC. That was most of what I wanted to hit on, and I actually then just wanted to add a thank you to Leslin for the GIAC MLK breakfast. It was, as always, a very successful event. Dr. Lavelle Brown spoke. There were quite a few legislators elected there. It was wonderful to see you all. I certainly encourage everyone to go. It is an annual event, and it is an opportunity to honor Martin Luther King's birthday, his life, his legacy, but also people in our community who are doing the work that Martin Luther King Jr. espoused. And so it was very inspiring. Leslin, your speech was also very inspiring about community members, so thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Anyone else? Okay, moving on. I'm going to go, just going to take a quick second here, folks, because I know we want to do the special presentation, but I just want to hit the resolutions added to and withdrawn from the agenda. I believe Michael has something.
Yes. I'd like to withdraw Resolution A to update the Administrative Policy Manual on Alcohol-Free Workplace and Personal Conduct. Needs a little wording work, and it's going to go back to GO. We'll bring it back.
Okay. Thank you very much, Michael. I also just want to hit the consent agenda real quick. resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. So first we have appointments. So quickly, Community Health Services Board, we have Thomas Lippa. Youth Services Board, we have Lisa Monroe. Environmental Management Council, we have George Adams. We have, now these pending committee action, we have...
We voted on them this morning.
We already voted on these this morning? Okay, great. Water Resources Council, we have Amanda Champion. Soil and Water Conservation District, Deborah Dawson and Dave McKenna. And then we have Ernest Warren, Supreme Court Library Board of Trustees. And taking on that challenge will be County Legislator Deborah Dawson. Yes.
I've never heard of that that library. Where is that?
It is in the – I'm going to let Deborah answer, but I know where it is. It's right over there.
I'm going to let Mike answer because I've been on this
in the courthouse,
2 years,
right?
And I've never gone to a meeting.
It's in the basement of the courthouse.
Okay.
Used to be in its own particular room, and it's now shares quarters with the surrogate's clerk.
So that's the law library.
That's the law library.
Right. We've ever been asked to have a board member on that?
Yes.
No, we always have a board member. They just never have meetings.
Okay.
I like it.
We're sending you to the basement there, Deborah.
So you are the liaison.
Now do we vote?
Yes.
So I need a motion for those. Anna, seconded by Deborah. All those in favor of those appointments? Okay, we're going to go through the resolutions as well. We'll do it all at one time. We have resolution number A, resolution to update the administrative policy manual. That was already pulled. Resolution B, we have the resolution urging New York State to ban the use of takeout containers, coffee cups, and loose packing materials containing expanded polystyrene foam as proposed by Governor Cuomo. We also have resolution number C, that's budget reappropriation of funding received in 2019 to the 2020 budget for Business Energy Advisors New Construction Program. Resolution D, budget adjustment for Business Energy Advisors New Construction Program. Budget 9E, or Resolution E, budget adjustment for Business Energy Advisors Lansing Program. Then we go to Public Safety Committee. We have Resolution F, authorization to accept tryout foundation donation and budget adjustment Sheriff's Office. We have Health and Human Service Committee, number G, acceptance of grant from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, Age-Friendly Center of Excellence. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution H, award of contract, Tompkins County Food Scrap Recycling, Recycling Materials Management Department, and number I, we have authorizing supplemental agreement number 2 with CNS companies for taxiway A and C rehabilitation, phase 1, construction, observation, and administration services, Ithaca, Tompkins, Regional Airport. Do we have any objections to any of those? Deborah has something
to say. I'm just going
to
move it.
Okay. We have a move by Deborah and seconded by Glenn. All those in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hands. All those opposed, 14-0. So that passes unanimously. Now we are going to move on back to the special topical presentation and legislative discussion. This is a presentation, as you all know, about the Green Street Conference Center by Gary Ferguson, Executive Director of the Downtown Ithaca Alliance. And I saw Gary here, and there he is. So we're going to lower the screens.
Thank you for having us come. I'm Tom Knipe, Director of Economic Development for the City of Ithaca, and it's a real pleasure to come and talk to you about a project that I began working on back in 2016 when we did the first Hundon feasibility study when I was the staff director for the Tompkins County Tourism Program. Peggy Coleman and Gary Ferguson are going to sort of walk you through where we are with some of the project details. We've been working really hard on all of those details before they do that, I think it's important to just remind us all that this is a real team effort. It's not really a project of one entity. It's been a partnership between the city, the county, the DIA, the chamber, and the CVB, and also of TCAD, the Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency, the developer, Vecino Group, and numerous advisors and consultants, including Hunton Strategic Partners and Civitas, who've lent their expertise. It's been a real team effort, and while that can be a challenge, I think it's also a great strength of this project. And so I think that's important to keep in mind. We have some resource people here tonight as well. I hope there's time for Q&A. Nels Bone is here, director of the Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency, and county staff are here as well, Nick and Katie and Jason. So with that, I turn it over to Peggy and Gary.
Well, thank you, everyone, for welcoming us back for this adventure. This is a really exciting opportunity, and I know you've heard some about the project, so we just wanted to share some updates on where things are. Just a reminder of the tourism economy in Tompkins County. Visitors have spent in 2018 $227 million here in Tompkins County, supporting over 2,600 direct jobs, over 3,700 total jobs, direct, indirect, and induced, and drives additional tax dollars into this county and supports all residents of Tompkins County. So if tourism was to go away, every single taxpayer in the county would have to pay an additional $746 in property taxes. So why supporting this industry is really important. I think a lot of times people think of the owners, but they don't always think about the rest of the people who are employed by our industry, and that ranges from the small business owners like the Ithaca's foodies folks. It includes the back of house folks, the people who are housekeepers, who are working in laundry, who are working multiple jobs because they're not able to find one full-time job to support them and their family. Also, that this industry is spread throughout the county. We have amazing bed and breakfast owners in Groton, in Enfield, throughout the whole county. And we're losing a lot of business. That's why we're here to talk about this conference center. The other thing I think is really important, there was a study done for businesses that are on the commons, the retail shops, the restaurateurs. More than 50% of their revenues comes from visitors. So their businesses cannot be sustained by residents only in Tompkins County. So why a conference center now? Basically, the planets have aligned, if you think of it that way. We have a once-in-a-lifetime kind of project. The state has pledged its support through a $5 million grant. We have a site that is no cost, thanks to the city owning the site. We have a developer in place who is very supportive of this project. We have a performer that works, and we have the opportunity for a new revenue stream through a specific benefit district. So the project details, I know you've seen drawings and things, but basically the Reader's Digest version is 49,000 square feet. It would be on two stories. Again, this is not a new build. We would be going into an existing footprint, so we need to fit accordingly. This would present us with the third largest sellable function space in upstate New York outside of the major conference centers like the Buffalo Convention Center and Rochester Riverside Convention Center. We would also have the seventh largest ballroom, which puts us into more competition for business that we continue to have to pass up or are losing. And it's $28 million all in, at least right now. We, as you know, we keep working on the pro forma numbers
to make sure that we are making everything work, and so it's a zero impact to the taxpayers. This is kind of the rough drawings as is. The pink area is the meeting space. The yellow is pre-function, so if you've been to conferences, think about when you've had trade shows or registrations, et cetera. And the blue area is what we call back of the house. So that's where, you know, the storage areas, the kitchens, the corridors for the workers to be able to get in between spaces in the facility. As far as demand for the conference center, you know, we continue to lose business, and I actually have a copy of the most recent business. I didn't pass this out. This is a RFP that we bid on, and we lost it as recently as Wednesday, the 15th. It is a piece of business that is the New York State Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. 3-year bid in March or April, 400 people, a net value of our lost opportunity on this one piece of business is $154,000. And that's just the newest one. We know that we have the capacity to welcome more guests to our community, especially that midweek, that Sunday through Thursday, when our current lodging industry has rooms available. And the demand is projected based on the information from 100 strategic partners. They did an initial study, and then they updated it further. So looking at the graph, no one wants to book into a building that doesn't exist. So your first couple of years, you're going to see smaller numbers of events happening in the facility. But then once you hit about year 5, you'll see a stability. And that's pretty much a still conservative, in my humble opinion, impact of events that we would be able to host here in Tompkins County in this conference center. And to give you a competitive analysis, the Saratoga City Center hosts about 196 events each year. So similar city, similar business. And then if you look at the number of visitors, again, ramping up, beginning in the 32,000 roughly, but figuring its stability, we would be welcoming additional 62,000-plus visitors. We know from the visitor profile study that we just got back that people really like this community. Ithaca and Tompkins County is a very attractive destination. We know the reasons why people are coming here for our higher education, our outdoor recreation, and there's a lot of business that we could then attract to have their conferences in the center and then push them out into the greater county area. So as far as demand for the centers, I mentioned state associations. There's over 1,100 existing, many that are headquartered in Albany where we have established relationships. The business related to Cornell, that one lost business piece that I mentioned, I mean, that would have aligned perfectly with CALS and the resources that they have to offer for speakers, but also to bring folks off from the center into the community to experience the campus as well. It's there for community use. There are so many events and activities that could be held that currently people are maxed out every place else. You can't put up a tent in the middle of winter for a fundraiser. There would be corporate business that would be coming in and doing events. Actually, while I was on the road last week, I had someone looking for function space, and again, we had to decline it because we just didn't have what they needed. And we would be focusing on predominantly New York State and the Northeast, but there's plenty others that we would be able to invite, especially with the increased capacity of our airport with direct flights in and out of the Metro DC area. So the benefits to the community, I believe, is now I'm going to share the microphone with my friend Gary.
Well, thank you very much. This is just a snapshot of some of the economic benefits that come from a project like this. There certainly will be annual, we call it annual spend. That's the money that trickles down or comes down to businesses of all sizes, particularly the small ones, in our community. You saw about about 22,000 annual room nights that we expect to see, and that's where the growth in room tax will come from. Certainly a growth in new taxes and a growth in jobs for the facility and for the operator who will be running it. But also, even more importantly, I think, it would be this center will help that hospitality industry maintain so many of the jobs that we have now. Sometimes that they're seasonal, sometimes a drop from a certain a number of hours a week to less when times get slow. That's really one of the benefits of a project like this, is it helps people in the trenches who really count on this work get the work that they need. One of the key things that's been driving us is a date, it was January 23rd, it's now February 6th. That is the date when the IURA will be determining the final complexion of the Vecino project. And that's the date that we're, I think, the IURA and Vecino and all will decide, do we go ahead with a conference center or don't we? You see there that list. Those are some of the key things that we have to that we were told and we were asked to come together with and find solutions for by this due date, because those are the things that they'll be looking at. Could we find a grant from the state or elsewhere that could help fill a gap? Could we put together a lodging stream of income? In this case, a tourism improvement district, a TID. Could we put together a workable financing model and put together a pro forma that made sense? And I think the answers are, you know, we are on path to do that. The TID, you all have heard a lot of discussion about that over time. At one point, we thought it would be appropriate and made sense to bring it to the county and say it should be countywide. I mean, based on assessments done by the county attorney, I think the sense was that we should try to do it not at the county level. And so we changed gears, and our pro forma and our plan and our process now is based on a city TID that could generate roughly a little bit more than $1.8 million dollars annually, and combining that with the revenue that the center itself will put together would cover the cost of the project. The TID that we're looking at now, just to again repeat, is one that would be citywide. We opted to do that. We've talked to the city leadership about that. We will be talking to the city in just a week or so about passing a resolution supporting that. The sense is, if we can make it work with the city TID, it will buy us opportunity to be a little more creative as we go beyond that date of February 6th. We are still holding out the possibilities as we get time to do that, to work with the town as on a possible TID, perhaps even the village. We certainly like the idea of exploring the idea of room tax expansion. We know that takes time. We know that requires you to go to the state. And so what we need to do right now is come up with a plan and a proposal that can demonstrate that this can work and work now, and as we can perfect it and make it even more equitable, distribute that burden, and reduce risk, we will do so as we move along. The financing model, just a little bit of background on that. We explored multiple ways that this could be put together and financed. And just to make it really, to bring it down, to boil it down, there were really two major sort of routes. One was to use revenue bonding.
And the other one was to do private financing. When we first started it, we were almost convinced it was going to be done doing bonding. As we got more into the weeds and worked through the numbers and looked at ways that we could make this pencil out, we found that private financing really was our preferred choice. We would be actually, with the way this would work, would be the developer of the project, Vecino, actually would build and own the property and actually finance it. So they would actually build, design, build a ready-to-operate turnkey facility for the conference center. They would lease that facility to an entity. The DIA has agreed that they would be willing to do that if necessary. In this model, it appears like it would be necessary. The net result of all this would be is certainly lower financing costs than we might find doing any other method. But this method, as well as the bonding methods, all required some sort of public guarantees by both the city and the county to help support this effort going forward. Banks are amazingly conservative in their approach, and they like to have second ways out, third ways out, as a way to make sure that they can cover and demonstrate that they've mitigated their risk to the maximum. So what does that mean? The way we've been looking at this, and we will be sharing a lot more of this with the HED committee when we meet with them on Thursday, we're really looking at something that would be shared with the city. There would be an agreement in place as to how it would all work, the terms of the best way for people to, if ever this had to happen, how it would happen. That the DIA for the Downtown Ithaca Alliance Board of Directors has already itself, at its last board meeting, indicated a willingness to participate on a limited basis to help out as well. What we've tried to do is, the bottom line is, this project pencils out. We promised everybody that we would not bring a project to the public forum that does not pencil out, that does not break even. And our pro forma does do that. It does contain a debt coverage ratio, extra money set aside just in case, at the request of the lender. It also puts a rental reserve in place, as well as a bunch of other reserves as well. Almost a total of $1.5 million worth of reserves. And if in fact we look at the idea of using expanded room tax going down the road, that certainly could provide a host of security for especially for the county. Real quickly, the pro forma, like I said, is a break-even budget. As you saw, it ramps up in early years. One of the things we've been trying to do is to reduce the original cost of this. We're estimated at close to $34 million. We've been picking away at the financing costs and also the construction and building costs. And we're in the final stages, actually, of looking at the construction costs now, working with some folks who are really experienced and knowledgeable about building conference centers. And we've been able to drive those costs down to what's closer now to about $28 million. So when we first started this, we looked at there were five issues that we had to overcome to make this thing work. We've been able to tick off four of them. There's one more we need to work on, and that's working on the financing side to make sure there are guarantees in place to make sure that the financing will work. And obviously, as we try to work with you going down the road and work with the city, that's one of our major chores going forward. Let me just close by saying that this really is a time to work on this project. Why are we here talking to you? Tourism is important to the county. It's one of your projects. It's one of the things that you guys work hard on. You spend a lot of time on it. You have committees working on it. I know I sit on a strategic tourism planning board, and it's one of the major things that this county really dedicates itself to. And building that part of our economy is really, really important. One of the best ways we can do that is by putting a project like this together. There aren't many ways you can increase demand, and this is one of the ways that you can do it. This is also a great way, as I mentioned, to protect and to grow jobs in this hospitality and tourism industry field. And these are jobs that are oftentimes held by low and moderate income folks. These are important jobs. And these are jobs that, like I said, there's 2,600 of them countywide. And then the other thing that I think we haven't talked about much is that we are building a community asset. We need a large place to gather as a community. And we don't have such a thing. You can go to get it. You can get it at Cornell. You can get it at IC, but only if you book it like 1 month in advance, because there's not a lot of opportunity to do that. It's really education first, as it should be. Our community does not have a large meeting space opportunity. If you wanted to gather, if a political party wanted to gather, you don't have a place to do it. If you wanted to have a major event, you don't have a place to do it. As a community, such a place would be so useful for us. Not just, I mean, obviously very useful for tourism, but also useful for the community. And it's something that we will have for decades. We are performing and planning this to be a minimum 30-year project. So this is a once-in-a-lifetime, I said once-in-a-lifetime, this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. I think that the stars and the planets for this won't align again for a long time to come. So we're very anxious to try to move this forward and look for your help and participation as we try to do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Gary. Certainly a lot of questions, I'm sure. I have two questions, actually. I'll jump right in. Gary, please don't use that carpet, because it would be bad. So, I want you to go back to one of your slides, though. You said it was $11.4 million in local new taxes over 20 years. You're probably like 7 or 8 slides back. And I only wanted to jump in first, Martha, because I wanted to clarify this slide. There we go. That seems low. Like by a lot. I mean, that would only be like $600,000, $700,000 so per year. And I can't imagine that's.
We will have to. I'll check that for you.
Would you do that?
Yeah, we did have the consultant do some analysis for us.
All right, thanks. No, I mean, considering what you're talking about, new annual spend and 22 new additional room nights, I mean, that I would think that would bring in more than that by quite a bit. So thank you.
Thank you.
I have Martha, then Anna, then Annie.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I mean, is that specifically sales tax, or would property tax, would this produce property taxes?
I believe that would be sales tax, but we need to verify that.
We will dig into our documents and let you know.
Okay, and then if it's owned by Vecino but leased by a nonprofit, does it pay property tax?
It is our understanding this would be a tax-exempt project.
Tax-exempt, okay. You mentioned community use. Is there a thought about a lower cost for local nonprofits, or is there, how would that work?
Yeah, it's a good question. That has come up several times. We're a little bit too early in that process, I think, to answer it directly, other than to say, yeah, that makes sense. We want it to be something used by the community. And so we want to make sure that's the case. It obviously has to. We wanted to make sure it cash flows too, but we will. But that idea of making a price rate for the community is something that does make some sense.
And I understand it might have to be like a certain number of events a year. You wouldn't want to fill it with the nonprofits.
Correct.
Could you go back to the schematics, the drawing? And my question is going to be about sort of, I'm trying to picture how many people could come to a conference here.
The idea behind the space was so that we would not compete with anything that already existed and would increase our opportunities. So the space would allow for 1,100, give or take, theater style. That's tourism speak for just rows of chairs, no tables. For banquet style rounds with a head table, dais, which takes up more space, is over 800.
Okay. So I'm thinking, we're about to go to NYSAC. I think that's certainly NYSAC would fit in as an example in this. And I know they have a conference they do the January conference in Albany, but in the fall they rotate, and I know they've wanted to come here. So we're, as you heard earlier, we're about to go to Albany to do some jawboning. I'm not sure, should we even raise this as a, we might be coming back to the state for room tax increase, or do you feel like it's not necessary, not ripe? What is the...
I humbly believe that may be putting the cart before the horse, because the February 6th meeting with the developers... Okay. If they choose a different option, then that may not be necessary.
Okay.
I don't know if you will.
I mean, it's an interesting. I think that's an interesting path to follow, and I think you. But right, I think we'll have to time it in such a way that it makes some sense.
Thank you, Martha. Anna.
Thank you for the presentation. Very thorough. Gary, as you know, I've been sort of, we've been in a discussion, debate of maybe bordering on harassing you to outline all the ways in which you can minimize the risk to the county if you are going to ask for anything from us. And so I wanted to go back to the slide where you had the reserves.
Yes.
So because the language might, having gone quickly, the significance of that for me, and I appreciate the slide you were just on prior.
Oh,
nope,
sorry.
Two backwards. That one. What my interest is that if there were ever a case that that the conference center fell short, I would want to know that you have a lot of contingencies in place before you ever need to get to us.
So do we.
And so, you know, those three last points to me are really important, because you are establishing not just one reserve. If I understand correctly, two. I thought there were potentially three different reserves. With the intention of funding shortfalls would come out of those separately. So one of them being, could you describe those reserves briefly?
Yeah, I can't go into great detail right now because I'm having trouble reading my very small pro forma. But yes, I can tell you that, like I said, there are several different sets of reserves we have baked into this to start with. That's part of the pro forma we are still working on. Not only are you interested in that, so is everybody else. I'd say even more than you and the city, Vecino is interested in that. They will be taking out the debt. And so they want to make sure that this happens as well. So it's very important that we have those reserves in place. We are actually, one of the things we will be presenting to the HED committee on Thursday will be a memo describing risk and risk mitigation. So it will lay out in detail for you, so I won't do that now, the specific ways that, just like what those different reserves are, what those different devices are that would help make sure that this has the lowest possible chance of ever not of ever getting to guarantors.
And I appreciate that, and I know that that would have been too long a conversation tonight, so I want to make sure that everybody knows that meeting is happening at 10:30 on Thursday morning for that in more in-depth conversation. Can you just describe briefly what you mean by a rental reserve and a replacement reserve?
Yeah, so, I mean, rental reserve is just that. I mean, we will be paying a number for rent on an annual basis to the developer. They want to make sure there's a reserve in place in case we aren't able to do that. And that's exactly what that is. And that's the exact reserve that we all want to have. So it wasn't a hard decision on our part. It made tons of sense.
And
replacement reserves are, I mean, eventually things break. Somebody stands on a table and dances on a table, breaks the leg. We have to fix it. Or an elevator breaks. I mean, that's rental reserve. We want to make sure that items like that do not also create hardships or problems that might make it difficult for the project. So all those will be put in place to mitigate and to make sure it can work effectively through the years.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Annie?
Thank you for doing the presentation for us. So some of my questions were answered. The ones I have left, I'll start with the first quick one. So it went by fast, but it looked like you could rent out smaller rooms. You didn't have to rent out.
Yes.
Okay. So
there's two large ballrooms, but the one large ballroom, and then the second junior ballroom is what we would call it. And they all subdivide. So the grand ballroom would divide into seven smaller sections, and the junior ballroom would divide into eight. So you could, in essence, have up to 15 total separate things going on. Or you could have multiple events happening concurrently where someone may be using the breakout rooms on one level and a completely different event is going on at the same time on the ballroom level on the upper floor.
Okay, thank you. Because I think for local events, especially with losing the space at Green Star,
exactly.
You know, there's quite a few events that I go to there. They're going to have something smaller, but it's not. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the events there use up the whole room. The second question, and then I have one more, is so there's an area for food, and I'm just wondering if you have an idea yet. If I'm at a conference there, will all the food, do they have capacity to serve all the meals, or will the restaurants benefit in some way?
Each conference group is different, and I'll use the event that I was just at, American Bus Association Marketplace. I was there representing our state, and it was a five-day event. It included an opening party the next day. The lunch was included, but people were on their own for breakfast, and they were on their own for dinner. And the tourism folks, we believe in supporting our craft beverage universe as well. So it would have the capacity to do all food functions, all breaks, but the idea is as we promote our community, we always promote them to get out and explore. So to be able to have a mix is really what would be the most beneficial to the community.
That makes sense. And then the last question I have is transportation, because years ago, with the Sierra Club, we hosted a statewide meeting here, and it was really hard for a lot of people to get here from the cities. Most people out here, not everybody, but a lot of people out in this area or this county have a car, but a lot of people living in the bigger cities, it was just very hard for them to get here.
Right. And that is something that we work with right now anyway. So we actively are promoting that for people who don't drive from coming from Metro New York City, they have options. They can come on our bus. They can come on the campus to campus. There are options. And then one of the other opportunities for us looking down the road is to actually build a resource fund so that we could then coordinate and promote to the conference group. If they have a lot of people who are headquartered in downstate, we could include as part of the conference package chartering a bus to bring their people up.
I would add that the second Hundon study looked very clear-eyed at that issue, because in 2003, when we did a first conference center study with Pinnacle Group, and basically the result of that study was don't build it, and there were two reasons given. One is we did not have the capacity of hotel rooms in our downtown at the time. We have that now. The other reason was you're isolated, hard to get to, that same issue. So we asked them, as they did interviews with meeting planners and state association business that might come here, what they thought about that. And in fact, what came back is, while that is a perception, it's also, we're also a desirable destination. And thanks to the work of the CVB and all the tourism marketing, that, you know, people want to come here. So there's a pull that helps address that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have Henry, then Shona.
Yes, I have a series of questions. First, I talked to Gary on Sunday about the number of people coming up here and being able to go out and have dinner or breakfast. What do you think is, because if you said that the ballroom is at 1,000 people, what's the maximum number of people you think that can come here you can have go out to restaurants?
Well, I mean, I think as I mentioned, we've had occasions where Cornell has had several large events on campus where we've entertained them in the community, and they've been over 1,000. What was the one just recently they had?
The Science Olympiad.
Yeah. Well, they were some 1,500 people. Now, they were staying on Cornell's campus, but they turned them loose in the community, I think, at least one, maybe two nights. And spread throughout the community, and that's why this is useful, because it does spread throughout the community. Think about the times when you go to on different conferences. Oftentimes you want to go see something unique or special about the place, and I know I get out and travel around and see, and that's the idea.
Cornell graduation weekend.
Well, that's off the charts, right? Right. So I think, yeah, as a community, we've learned how to handle large crowds like that. And frankly, we'd all love the opportunity to do more of it.
We, as a kind of tag on to that, for big event weekends like graduation, but also even Apple Harvest Festival, we've had visitors who have come here and said, we don't want to eat downtown. We want to get away from all of the hectic stuff that's going on at the event. Can you suggest restaurants nearby that we could go to? So there is already that automatic push factor that we're able to service those people.
Also, in terms of the workforce, and you would know better than I, what is the, I mean, I know we have a very low unemployment rate. Do we have enough workers to actually, you know?
We have a lot of tourism industry workers that are, as I mentioned, working multiple jobs, and especially at this time of year. If I am a banquet server and all of the holiday parties are done and both campuses are closed, I'm not getting hours. So hopefully I've cross-trained so that I can then pick up hours in another department. Or more likely than not, I am working retail someplace, and I'm being a restaurant server as well as being a banquet server. So the opportunity is for some of these folks, instead of working two and three and sometimes four jobs or not working at all during this really slow period, it raises them up. It gives them an opportunity to, instead of having three jobs, possibly one full-time year-round job that then comes with benefits too.
Yeah, that's my next question. Do you think you'd be able to pay a livable wage to the people?
I don't know how to answer that, Henry, to be honest. There are many of us, including our visitor center staff, that we do pay. We have everyone at $15 an hour or more. So, you know, it is an important aspect, but these employers are spread throughout the county, so it's not something that the conference center could dictate to every other business, tourism business in the county, what they would need to pay their employees.
I think we'd certainly have to pay attention to it. The DIA is a living wage employer itself, so yes.
Okay. So would you also use, do you know whether the deal is that you're going to use local labor in terms of building the project? It's already?
There will be, absolutely, yeah. But the details of that will come as Ficino begins putting their resource. I mean, they will be building it, and so they will give us more. But, oh, yes, they're planning to use significant local labor.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know it was in the city. Also, I read the Hundin report today, and it was sort of, you know, disconcerting to me about how they said that most conference centers lose money.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, the Saratoga Conference Center, which was built in, 1984, is still losing money. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you, you know, you're talking about reserves and everything else, mm-hmm. but, you know, how do you say that you're going to not, you know, you're going to basically...
No, good question.
But, yeah.
Good question. Obviously we asked Hundin to be as direct and as clear as possible. Conference centers generally, most all of them, not 100%, but I would say over 90% of them, do not cover their costs. They need another stream of income to help with that. Typically, that's room tax. Here we decided it might be easier to do something like a TID because it doesn't have to go through the state. But that is a normal model that cities and counties and communities do use to help fund their operations. Why do you do it? You do it because you want to have a large center. You want to have something that attracts visitors. You want to have something that the community can use. And there's a cost that goes along with that. Now, you don't want to have something that doesn't break even. That doesn't make any sense. So you need to have that extra stream of income and set up your pro forma to make sure that that's the case. And that's what we've been trying to do.
Thanks, Gary.
Hey, last question. Peggy, I know that I read some other materials that talked about how, and it was over time, that basically the market is becoming more and more competitive, and it is more, like, you know, we're talking about, I think Cortland is in one of the other cities, talking about doing another conference center and everything else. What's been the conference center market? Like, I mean, what's been sort of the market? I mean, has in fact Saratoga, have they been declining or have they been going up? What do we know about the general market?
Saratoga has been consistent. They have not seen a decline. The conference industry is cyclical also because many conferences meet on a rotation pattern. So especially state associations, east, central, downstate, upstate. So if you had something 1 year, if their rotation does not allow them to come back to you for 4 years. So there can be some fluctuation. I'm interested to hear the Corning information because someone who worked for 20 years in Corning and 5 of those years at the Radisson Hotel, which is the largest function space in the county, in Steuben County, except for two weekends a year, if you could throw up a blow-up conference center, there was never an appetite to put one in there. And quite frankly, the difference between Corning and our community here, we have more to offer. They don't have the room inventory to support a conference center. And so I've not heard this, and usually anything that happens in Corning, they're hitting me up first.
They
do.
It's a really good question because, I mean, there was a time, I don't know, 4 or 5, even 10 years ago when I was concerned that, you know, people weren't going to go to conferences anymore, that business was going to dry up. And it hasn't. it's sort of morphed, it's changed, and conferences now are as frequent as they were previously. They're just done differently. People are doing, you know, one or two annual conferences. They've changed the way they do them. But all of us belong to associations of one sort or another, and conferences are still part of what they do. We thought they would go away, but no, they haven't. What's actually been interesting is a lot of us take them a little more seriously, and you know, there are times when we extend our stays, and you know, and well, you didn't extend your stay when you went to Omaha, but when I, you know, but when I go to New Orleans, I extended my stay. You know, it's a but, and I think people would do that when they come here to Ithaca as well. So I think that it's interesting that, you know, there was a time when people were worried that folks weren't going to do conferencing anymore, but I think it's been proven that that's not the case, and organizations and groups still do them. Folks want to meet face to face, and that's why this continues to be something I think of interest to us and to folks from around the country.
I would also just add briefly that the business model for this conference center is based on conferences being only one type of business that flows through meetings, special events, including weddings, banquets. Those are all also part of the mix. So we obviously conferences and as a market is very important to this conference center being successful, but it's diversified in terms of the types of business that would take place here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Henry. I have Shauna.
Hi there. Thank you for coming out and giving us this presentation. I see here on your handout that one of the last questions that you ask on page one is, will you support this initiative? And I think for me personally, I'd like to know exactly what the ask is going to be. And I need to see more of the numbers. Are we talking about a temporary backstop? Are we talking about 5 years or 10 years or indefinite? Like, those are really important questions that I think all of us really need answered. The second thing is that I would want to know if they are planning on a conference center in Corning. If we're talking about a regional conference center, then we would have two, and that could be too much. The third thing is the cost of construction. Obviously, we just got finished doing renovation on an airport. We thought going into it 2 years ago we were going to pay a certain amount, and that amount went up really fast. So just be aware of that. I'm sure you will be. And then my concern right now is that I feel like as a county and just as society, I don't know where the economy is going. 2 years from now, we could be in a much different place than we are right now. As a legislator that's been here for 2 years, I feel very fortunate that I look at these great spreadsheets that Rick brings forth, and it's amazing. And certainly I can't take a whole lot of credit for that, but I do feel like, you know, in the next 5 years, we could see a recession. And I've worked for companies that during a recession, they don't allow you to travel. You're doing a conference in your hometown. And so that's something that I would also want to be on the radar. As we look forward at our county and at the investments that we're making, we just finished building a renovation on our airport. We have Medicaid costs that we're really uncertain of. We have a county building that we hope to build in the next few years. It's going to be 20, 25 million plus, and then we have a jail. So I feel like we have a lot of balls up in the air. So to invest in something like this makes me nervous. I just wanted to be very, very upfront about that.
I think it's completely understandable, quite frankly. You know, as we've been going through the numbers and trying to make sure everything is accurate, it makes us nervous too. We don't want this to impact the local taxpayers. The one thing that can be shown through evidence is during recessions, the one industry that has shown growth is tourism. And so while people may not be going to as many conferences, or that impact may change, so instead of going to a national conference, they're focusing on a state or a regional level. So I think we as an industry are
constantly aware that we need to be nimble and be ready to position and shift as the economy presents itself. And the thing with conferences, they don't book 6 months out, so that they're booking, you know, the bid that the lost business I flashed to y'all, that was for 2021, 2022, and 2023. So there is a little bit of safety in the just the way that the industry works, but believe me, we hear you.
I'm going to call on Martha. Just a reminder, though, this is like a first pitch. Martha.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm glad, Tom, that you mentioned the weddings, because that's the banquets line. Is that right?
Weddings would be in banquets, but there would also be bowling banquets and holiday, you know, other things, fundraisers for nonprofits, et cetera.
Okay, because I mean, the Sister Friends Luncheon is kind of always looking, we end up going to Ithaca College because it's the only large space, and then they got parking problems and et cetera, et cetera. So, and I know at the IDA we've had a couple of applications recently for wedding venues with the applicants coming and saying, look, there's a real dearth, there just really aren't appropriate places, and you know, and not enough, and certainly not big enough, et cetera. So, and I just would remind folks about the airport. I think our big part of our cost, maybe major part of our cost overruns, was the externally determined deadline. Where we even had, you know, we weren't getting the federal grant. We had a jumble things around because of, you know, and do things out of order. That raised costs, and just, you know, working 7 days a week because we were under the gun to meet the deadline. It's not the typical kind of construction project. So.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
And we'll talk more about this as we continue the conversation, but I just wanted to briefly mention that as a private developer-led project, there'll be a guaranteed maximum price contract that Vecino will have with the construction company. And so, you know, Vecino will be bearing most of that risk along with the construction company themselves under this model. So that's one way. And obviously, our numbers, we don't have a bid yet, and so there'll be a sequence of steps before which we'll ask any guarantor to sign an instrument, and we would hope to have much, you know, even more refined numbers prior to that.
All right. Thank you, Tom. I want to thank you three for your presentation on the Sigler Convention Center. Fantastic. Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll hear more about it Thursday, right? So Thursday, 10:30, there'll be more?
Yes.
Is that right, Anna? All right.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. We can raise the screens, please. Oh, that's you. Funny.
Thank you.
That guy slipped in the center of the microphone. You start talking about
it's
now.
No, you can't.
He's just stuck calling it that. Don't get that name. Do the chair's report and the chair. Well, we already did the appointment, so we'll do the chair's report. We'll hear from our county administrator, county attorney, and finance director, and then we'll take a break for like 10 minutes. Sound good? All right. So the chair's report. I've been sending stuff out every week, so you guys are pretty much up to date. It's been a full couple weeks. Beginning of the year, obviously, a lot of meetings. Met with Cornell a couple of times. Good things came out of those meetings. I was actually going to ask Martha to chime in, but she already did. She took all the wind out of that sail. So, as you know, we're going up to Albany. We have some good lobbying points. As she mentioned, you know, everybody's going to be lobbying against this Medicaid cost. We're obviously one voice of, you know, 62. And I do know at least one senator is against any kind of shift back to the counties, and I think you're going to find a lot of support within the state senators. I'm actually going to start off with that. I've known Jim Seward for probably 20-something years. I want to thank him for all his service. Really is one of those people who you want to model yourself after, I think, when it comes to public service. I mean, here's a guy, you know, born in Oneonta, went to Hartwick College, went to a SUNY, SUNY Albany, was a judge for a little bit, ran for state senate, and has been in state senate since I was in high school. I mean, I wasn't even living here, and he was a state senator. So 1987, and just has been able to kind of wade through all the morass that is Albany, and has really, I thought, protected his constituents extraordinarily well. I mean, this is the kind of person I would say that I, you know, who am I, right? I go to a dinner, and he'll sit down with me, and he'll spend half an hour, and we'll talk about Tompkins County. I mean, there are certainly people in the room that he could be working, and he could be hustling, and whatever, and it's just that's not kind of what he's about. Really is very constituent-driven, and I just wanted to tell him that I appreciate it. And I wanted to say to his wife, Cynthia, and his kids that he really couldn't have done it without you. Just like this fight with cancer that he's going through and is still going through. If it wasn't for his wife and children, I don't think he'd be able to do that fight. I mean, it's hard being a senator, right? You're home a lot, but you're in Albany a lot. And frankly, you're on the road a lot. I mean, you're 2 hours up there, 2 hours back, whatever how fast he drives. But it takes you away from your family, and you sacrifice a lot for that job. And I know that people think, oh, yeah, but you have the title, and it's pretty good money. And, yeah, but, you know, you miss the baseball game, too, and you miss the hockey game, and you miss, you know, dinners with your family. And I don't think that that's kind of recognized enough, and I really do want to thank Jim and his family for his service. And I know he's not going into some pasture either. I know that he will continue working for his constituents, and there's really no better guy with knowledge about health care at the state level than Jim, and certainly somebody that we can refer to, I think, in the future and going forward. So, again, Jim, I want to thank you personally for that, and I think from the legislature for all your service. I appreciate it. Also, getting back to just my quick report on the week, I mean, we talked a lot about a lot of different things. I went to business after hours up at the airport. It is beautiful. If you've not been up there, go up there. If my call, I was up there a week before he opened, and he's telling me, oh, yeah, we're going to be done. And I'm like, man, if you say so. But I'm thinking they might have packed everything in a closet. And there's a closet someplace at the airport that'll spring open when you – it's like your kid's room, right? But no, it is just an amazing place. And frankly, it's more than just an airport. You guys know I fly around, and I fly into some of these little airports, and they're nice, right? You fly in, there's a guy working the airport, there's sometimes a diner, and it's a very homey kind of feel. We've got a pretty big airport. I mean, we could take in pretty large aircraft, and yet you go into the airport now, it's a community place. I mean, it really is. If you want to have a meeting up there, there are meeting rooms. If you want to go and just have a cup of coffee and hang out at the airport, not actually a bad thing to do, you have Ithaca Coffee right there. It really is. I mean, there's a playground now. If you have your kids for the morning and you're like, I don't know what to do, we're someplace warm that's someplace different than we haven't been. Head up to the airport, watch some planes come down, play on the playground. It was really a nice space. It was a nice event. And the plaque's pretty nice, too. So you get all that. Beyond that, went up to Cornell, talked about a lot of different issues. Habs was definitely talked about, something they're going to be, I would imagine, are going to be involved in. I mean, the land-grant school, certainly something impacting New York State, and a lot of other colleges are working on it as well. We are working on it, so I'm sure there will be a lot of talk about that going forward. A little bit about the state budget. I mean, obviously, the Medicaid thing is going to be important. Whenever the state starts throwing them out acronyms for things, I get worried. The MRT, the Medicaid redesign team, that concerns me because you've already named it, and that seems like you're moving ahead with that very quickly. But they're also, I mean, they're talking about $1.8 billion getting back from local assistance, $2.1 billion. And I like this one, too. This is receipt estimates. They're going to do a revised receipt estimate. So that's taxes. Great. So that's $2.1 billion in that. and $611 million from state agencies. So I'm not as pessimistic as some. I'm not as optimistic as others. I mean, we'll certainly work it out. And, you know, Jason, I'm sure, will probably – he obviously knows more about it than I do, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure. Some of the encouraging things, though, I mean – they're talking about $275 billion in infrastructure. Some of that's already gone out the door, but $9 billion of it is for affordable housing. And $64 to $128 million is going towards homeless. They're talking about reducing the tax rate on small businesses. And they're actually doing $25 million to address hate crimes, which are obviously are on the rise in New York State. They're going to spend $25 million to figure out why and hope to combat that. So those are just the major things I pulled out of it. Obviously, there'll be a lot more talk about this, and we'll see what happens in Albany when you guys go up there. So that'll be exciting. That is about it for me. I want to thank you guys. I've been doing the best job I can do here as county as your chairperson. I've been going to all the meetings, trying to report back to you as best I can, going to the leadership meetings, inviting the people who are running for chairman and people running for vice chair to those meetings, and they've attended. And I think everything's going pretty well. I think the one thing we need to shore up now is committees. There are certain people on the legislature who aren't on any committees yet, and we're going to remedy that quickly. So there's that on the table. And frankly, if this goes on as it does, we're going to need to solidify the committees, and hopefully Mike, yes, this is actually Mike.
Are you thinking you're going to appoint different committees?
I'm thinking we're going to have to move ahead shortly.
Are you thinking you're going to have to appoint different committees?
It's certainly going to be under discussion shortly. So with that said, I'm going to turn this over to Jason. Jason, go ahead.
Good evening. I have several things to update you on, but first I wanted to present for you, for your consideration, confirmation for the Director of Human Rights. As you know, in mid-December, we started interviews with the Director of Human Rights candidates. We did phone interviews. We received more than a dozen applicants, did phone interviews to narrow that list down to three finalists. Those three finalists were interviewed by a panel, included myself, Deputy Administrators Amy Hendricks and Lisa Holmes. Legislators Leslin and Henry joined us for those as well. Two members from the Human Rights Commission, one being the chair, and Lance Salisbury, our assigned counsel. Supervising attorney. Had a good series of interviews, the candidates, and Jonathan, that's right. Jonathan was with us. And Jonathan Wood, our county attorney. Had good interviews. Also, following each interview, each candidate met with members of the Human Rights Commission as well as legislator Shauna Black. And we received feedback from those folks that attended and spoke with those candidates. Went through another meeting, actually had another meeting of the panel after the new year to deliberate the candidates. And the unanimous recommendation to me from the panel was to permanently appoint Dr. Ken Clark as the Director of Human Rights. As you know, Dr. Clark has been the interim director since May of 2018. He was a special advisor to the department for months before that. Aside from having a career dedicated to human and civil rights, he has lived in this community for a little over 20 years of doing the same. Worked closely with Ken over the past 2 years, had a lot of fun, had some fun things to work on, and I'd like to request, unless there's a reason to go to executive session, request your confirmation of his appointment as the Director of Human Rights.
I see a motion from Martha, right? Seconded by Henry.
Not for executive session.
Yes. Thank you.
This is for the actual.
This is for the confirmation, yes.
This is what I thought. So we have a motion and a seconder. All those in favor? Any opposed? Congratulations, Dr.
First, I want to thank the legislature. All of whom I count as colleagues, and as well as Jason as county administrator and the search committee for this vote of confidence. I could not have imagined on November 6, 2017, when Jonathan introduced me to the OHR staff as special advisor, that it would lead to this moment. I will say that it's good to be out of limbo. But I have enjoyed my time working in the county. That may sound ironic to you, but I have actually come to recognize that really for the better part of 30-some years, I have been working in some measure or the other, either as an educator, as an activist, as a pastor, on human rights issues, really stemming all the way back to my divinity school experience in the 80s when I first encountered human rights and its relationship to social justice, in particular in terms of the legacy of Dr. King, whose school I attended, and Malcolm X, among others. And so in many ways, for me personally, you know, a saying that kind of keeps me going at times is God moves in mysterious ways. And I found that this coming to this position, this opportunity to work as special advisor, then interim director, sort of led me to pursue this job, and I'm grateful for the opportunity and thank all of you for the support and the work that you've done with me over 2+ years, and I look forward to what the future holds in terms of our working together. Thank you very much.
I just have a few more things, if that's all right.
Sure.
I don't know if I know more about Medicaid than anybody right now, to be honest with you. So we've looked. I've had a flurry of emails from other county administrators in the state, and I most certainly will bet NYSAC will have quite a brief on this. They're probably working feverishly between now and Sunday to get some draft or interim publication out on the impacts of the budget. We will come back at the next legislative meeting with hopefully a handful of information, and hopefully before that distribute it to everyone so we start to know the impacts as we do every year. And we'll go from there. I know we have a good contingent going to NYSAC this year. I will bring up something, and Mike, you emailed Frank Krupa this earlier today or this evening. I did reach out to Frank about this coronavirus and if we had anything to be concerned about. With all of the international travelers we have coming back to the community from break, he did advise that last week they put a local advisory out to local healthcare providers, ensuring that they're keeping an eye out for travel histories and as well as symptoms, and they're also in direct contact with Cornell Health around this issue. So right now, his words were, "Don't panic yet," and they're continuing to keep in communication with the healthcare community. And should anything change, we'll brief the legislature. But it's good to hear that they were proactive as of last week in this with all the healthcare partners in the community. Other than that, one thing that did come up this evening. Maybe it didn't come up, but the town of Enfield is here, so I'll bring it up. The sheriff and I met with Supervisor Beth McGee to discuss a draft agreement for the sheriff's office to have a substation at their location. Right now, they have the draft agreement. Their town attorney is going to review it, communicate with Jonathan Wood, and I expect the next 30 days or so we'll probably have something in front of the legislature or something executed so we can move forward with that.
I'm sorry, where was that?
Enfield? Did I get it right? Enfield. Not Newfield. Enfield. Correct. I'm sorry. So, that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you for your report. I just wanted to mention something to Dr. Clark that, really, congratulations on this. I'm going to take a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds. I did go to the MLK breakfast on Saturday, and I wanted to tell you personally that I really appreciate what you do. You come at things. When I go to dinner breakfast like that and I go to other things like that, I hear from voices that I don't hear from generally. And I appreciate it because sometimes it surprises me. And I remember when you first took the reins of the commission, of the division, you invited us all in, and I met with you pretty early. And it was refreshing because, it's one thing to say, yes, we need to have diversity and we need to accept everyone. But I'm so glad to have somebody who does that the other way because otherwise I can't get there. So when there's an issue that I may have walked past, before, having you in this role helps me not do that. And I just wanted to let you know, and I count on Leslin to do that too. So it's not a,
I was about to take offense to it.
So So again, congratulations on the appointment. I appreciate that has happened. So, all right, turning over to the county attorney. Acting county attorney.
I've been rehearsing this for days. I have nothing to report.
Are you just reading from an old squid?
Yes.
All right, Rick Snyder, Rick Finister.
Without looking at the numbers in a spreadsheet, even though I know Amanda loves the spreadsheet, I do have some remarks on our December sales tax. We don't have the numbers crunched so that you can see the exact figures, but I've been into it enough to know about 50% through the calculations that our December was higher than our previous December, and that's even with the money coming out for AIM that we talked about. Our fourth quarter is higher than our previous fourth quarter, and our year to date for the end of the year is higher than our previous year to date. It's a very good year in sales tax, and you'll see all the blurry numbers next time that we meet. Other good news for you, we have received our Moody's rating call and our rating report, and the press release will go out tomorrow that we've maintained our AA1 credit rating, which is the highest credit rating that any county in New York has. So we successfully have fulfilled that portion of work that brings us closer to our February bond issue. And I think we spoke with Jeff a little while earlier that we'll be running that press release onto the website in the next day or two. And that's all I have. If you have questions, I'll take them.
Yes, Amy.
Thank you for your report, Rick. And so I was wondering for AIM funding, so trying to remember back, so some of it started to get taken out in December, or can you explain that again?
For the AIM funding, if you remember, they told us 6 months, 8 months ago that we would be paying that portion to municipalities from our sales tax rather than the state paying the AIM funding. And then just a few months ago, they told us how and when that would actually come off the top of our sales tax, where they actually just skim it right off the top. And it's in two payments. The biggest portion was in December, this current month. I think it was around $275,000, give or take $5,000. And then in May, there's another $75,000 or $80,000 that will come out again in May of 2020. Altogether, it's about a $350,000 hit to our sales tax. But it's split over those two fiscal years, and that portion which came out in December, they basically skim it right off the top, like I said, and that even with that, we've had a better December than the previous December.
Thank you.
All right. I have Dan and then Rich.
Rick, do you know when we might hear about our casino revenue for the last year, the last quarter?
We usually get them this week in one of those 22nd, 23rd days. So, again, when I bring you the sales tax report, next time we meet, I'll probably have that year-to-date casino revenue for you also.
Thank you.
Richard.
Dan just asked my question. I could have bet on that.
Leslie.
And perhaps either Bill or Rick can give us an update on where things are with the whole opioid class action suit in which we had joined onto. Is there any new word on that? Anything happening? Where is it?
I cannot give you anything specific, but I can tell you based on 40 years of practice, a case like this is going to move at almost a glacial rate.
You'd have to ask Jonathan about that. Jonathan usually shares that sort of information with me, so the fact he's not said anything leads me to believe we don't know much. But it's in the hands of attorneys, and it's like herding cats to get all the parties together and all the documents together and what have you.
Okay. That's a lot of information. Thank you. We herd cats.
Yeah, what about that?
Does anyone else have any questions? Okay, seeing none, that's it for leadership reports. And we're going to move on to the committee reports. We're going to take a break first, so let's take 20 minutes. 10 minutes. Is that good? Yes. 5 minutes? No, she needs 10. She probably needs 15.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. Thanks.
All right. Bringing the Tompkins County Legislature back into session. We're going to start with committee reports. Standing committees, government operations. Mike Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Temporary Chair. The Government Operations Committee met on January 17th. We talked about two administrative policy manual updates. They were coming to this meeting tonight. I withdrew them because we decided they need a little tinkering with the language and need to go back to the committee. We want it to happen when our county attorney is present to discuss that. So that's where that went. It has to do with alcohol and personal conduct. We've had some questions about that. We passed a resolution, which is tonight we'll be talking about adding some funds from the contingency to our travel and training budget. And those of you who are excited about not having meetings, we did pass a resolution that'll come, I think, to the next meeting, in which a majority of the Government Operations Committee recommended to not have the first meeting in August. And as you recall, we were asked to take that back and look at it at the last meeting.
I'm sorry, Mike, you said, I missed what you said, that to not have it?
August. Yeah, the committee voted to amend the meeting schedule to delete the first meeting in August.
Thanks, that's what I missed.
It was reported that Pat Pryor, who's been the chair of our Public Information Advisory Board, is stepping down and retiring from that. So we're going to be looking for that board to get some new members. We need them a lot for help with the census project that we're doing. That's pretty much what I have. And I think I have one resolution. Unless there's any questions. The appropriation from contingent fund increase in travel and training budget, Tompkins County Legislature, and I so move.
Seconded by Leslin. Any discussion? Yes, Martha.
I remember when we talked about the revision in the rules of the legislature, there was discussion about this amount, $5,000, would allow us to pay for the NYSAC legislative conference, but it might not cover the second conference, and so I just...
That's correct. Discussions with our clerk, and because it's in her budget for the legislature, we thought that we need to bring this one forward first to make us whole through the winter conference, and that we will be taking another look at where we are for the fall.
Right, as I was going to say, if we could just, I just wanted to sort of put a marker down that I hope that we will reconsider later in the year when it looks like, you know, if we do have to add another amount, that I would like this to be understood as not necessarily the full amount for 2020.
I think that's what the committee understood.
Any more discussion? All those in favor of the motion? Short roll call.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
I see any opposed? None opposed? Passes unanimous. All right. Thank you, Michael. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deb Dawson.
Thank you. Today we had our initial exposure to the EMC's report on recommendations for forest management going forward. We had a lot of time to spend on the report. Lots of questions were asked. We had a very interesting discussion, and it is the beginning of what will likely be a somewhat lengthy conversation about how we move forward on managing our forests.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Any questions? All right. Thank you, Deb. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane.
right after the Government Operations Committee, the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee had a meeting. But before that, we had a special meeting on January 15th, which was done in executive session, and that was our performance reviews for the two direct reports that we were looking at this year, our county administrator and our director of finance. The committee was joined with some of the other legislators, all of which were invited, and we'll be scheduling another time which we will be going over our final report on that. On January 17th, we met, and some of the things that had to do with TC3 we discussed a little bit, or quite a bit. You've seen some emails coming through at this point regarding a lawsuit reported in the Ithaca Times and the Ithaca Voice, brought by some former retired executives of TC3 regarding changes in health insurance. We're just trying to keep up with that as to what's going on there. And I did forward to everyone an email about that from the board chair, Ray Slaughter, this over the weekend. TC3 enrollment is not good. I sent you out an article from the Albany Times Union about all the community colleges that are down. TC3 is down a lot. The article may not be accurate because it may not have all of the things that the college does. And for example, it may go back far enough to when the state mandated that the TC3 could no longer run the high school summer school program, which had been a very good working relationship with the area high schools conducted by TC3 at the Ithaca High School. The state said, no, TC3 couldn't do that anymore, so they were not allowed to count the high school students in that program toward their FTE count. And they said it had to be done only at the high school level. So that may, the loss of those FTEs a few years ago may be in that count, where we're down as much as 45% in the student population, which they were talking about, the FTEs. So we got to keep an eye on what's going on out there. However, we did have a report from at the college board meeting last week, from the new interim CFO, Bill Talbot, and he has been looking at the enrollment versus what was projected in this year's budget, and they are, for that, within 5 of FTEs of what they had projected. So they were pretty pleased about that. Now, that doesn't mean overall they aren't way down from what they were a few years ago, but it means that some of the bleeding from the budget that we've seen over the last couple of years because of the loss of FTEs and the more optimistic projections will not be repeating itself as much this year. Also, there could be as much as $250,000 left over unspent from last year that may go into the reserves this year. So I wanted to report those things.
Thank you very much, Mike. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you very much, Mike. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet tomorrow at 3:30 right here. But I also wanted to take the opportunity to say thank you to Irene Kehoe of the Assessment Department, the Assistant Director of Assessment, and Christina Travis, who worked with the 911 Center for planning and coordinating the reading and discussion program, both of whom did human's work, the
last reading and discussion session that was held back in October, November, dealt with, I'll tell you the topic, standing down from warrior to civilian. It dealt with veterans, folks who have served, and just sort of understanding, having conversation around that. They felt that it was a very good topic, very good engaging discussion. The folks who attend these sessions come from all levels of county government, frontline employees, senior staff, etc. And most of them leave their sessions feeling very happy to have participated and also appreciating the alternative way of engaging in conversation and meaningful conversation, impactful conversation around diversity and inclusion. So I do want to, on the record, thank Irene and Christina. The assessment department has been, they stepped up and has been very involved with this. And I know that given everything that's coming up for them, they're coming on their busy season, that they cannot continue to just do this. Our hope was to institutionalize this program in a way that we can rotate different departments, different employees taking it on. I know at a couple of WDIC meetings ago, we sort of sideways looked at the, at that time, interim director of the Office of Human Rights. We gave him the side eye that our expectation that his department will be the next to sort of take it on. He didn't say no. He didn't quite say yes. So at this point, you know, we'll be giving him the side eye again and hoping that we continue this new topic, new idea. Folks really love this and hope we can continue to have discussions around service folks. And so anyhow, more importantly, I want to say thank you to Irene, thank you to Christina, thank you to the others who have been involved in planning this and keeping it going ever since former Deputy County Administrator Paula Younger departed from county employment. It really is a good program, and we want to encourage others, other employees, even some of our legislators, to be involved in continuing to plan and roll it out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis.
Thank you, Mike. As I've said, the Housing and Economic Development meeting will be at 10:30 on Thursday morning. 10:30. And there are a few things on the agenda, including, as you heard today, the presentation, the more in-depth discussion, less of a presentation, but more discussion, with the interest particularly of diving into a bit more of the financials of the conference center to address some of the questions, the good questions that Shauna brought up, that others brought up concerning the security of the pro forma, the balancing of the pro forma. We also will have a review of the priorities that were established earlier in the year, and I wanted to do a quick shout out to Amy Hendricks for taking on, she didn't realize I was going to do that, but she has taken on the initiative of putting together an outline of the housing services that the county is involved in. As I've said before, we do not let have land use authority, as everybody knows, but we are extensively involved in housing, and I think that it's helpful for all of us to see the extent to which and the details to which we are and the organizations that we support, and more importantly, how they collaborate together so that we can understand the network of housing supports that we provide. So Amy has taken the lead on that, has been in touch with all of the department heads as well as the agencies that we work with, and this is not an ongoing meeting. This is a one-off meeting where we've asked them all to come, but I thought it would be a wonderful review. So anybody who's interested in housing, I highly recommend that you come, and that is 10:30 on Friday, or on Thursday. And I think that's my full report.
Yeah, very much. Any questions?
Don't come Friday. Come Thursday. If you don't like the topics, come Friday.
Thank you, Anna. Complete Census Count Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
The Census Committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. We're on pins and needles waiting to find out if we get the grant money and how much we get from New York State. And Lisa, and Amy Hendricks is on top of that, but we aren't hearing from the state yet.
Thank you, Michael. And I want to thank, I think it was Annie, who reached out to the town of Lansing, asked them if it was, Amanda, thank you very much. The town of Lansing definitely appreciates that, reaching out and telling them that this person's available for the census, because they obviously have questions like every other town does. Why, do you want to say something else?
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm doing that with pretty much every village and town. Our new partnership specialist in Tompkins County is Rich Bennett, and he is happy and willing to go to everyone's boards and everyone's, you know, meetings to give a short presentation and answer questions and get, you know, the more that everyone else knows about it, the better it can do. So if you haven't gotten an email from me yet, expect to get one.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Martha.
And Rich did put an order in for 400 chip clips and chapsticks for the Sister Friends Luncheon, which is going to be Friday, March 13th at Emerson Suites at Ithaca College. Leslie and I don't have tickets yet, but anyway, stay tuned. But it's really nice. We're going to have two different pieces of swag for those bags. That's right before the census. And they're going to also table up at the event.
March 13th?
March 13th.
Henry, yes.
And Mike, is it true that the census is now paying $20 an hour?
Hadn't heard that. The last figure I heard was 18.
Amanda?
At the PIAB we talked about that. It's true in Tompkins County. In some places it's up to $24 an hour.
$24?
Yes, because they need people. And especially in Tompkins County, they need people. So, I know.
Anna?
Amanda, when you say some places in Tompkins County?
No, I'm sorry. No. Some other places.
Some of the counties.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Some of the counties that truck.
Tompkins County is 20.
And are we still the lowest county in New York State?
So what are you doing, people, watching TV? Get out there. $24 an hour. That's amazing.
20
bucks.
20
in Tompkins County.
It's almost a livable.
Is that just to go to do house calls, or is there other types of positions?
You have a job, Jason.
I'm just curious. Is that just to do house call?
I think it's the follow up. If you don't fill out your online form, at some point somebody will come knock on your door, and so it's those kind of jobs. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Census is good. And Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not met since our last legislature meeting, so I have no report.
Thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Rich John.
Thank you, Mike. The Public Safety Committee met on January 16th, and we had a report from Patricia Buchel. That was her last meeting as Public Safety Committee meeting as department head for the probation department. And she talked about the model used by the probation department in working with people under supervision. It's known as the risk need responsivity principle. And it was an interesting discussion about how that's managed. We also talked about emergency radios and and how the whole system is being turned over to new models and the financing and how that's being handled between the towns. And then we had a good discussion about bail reform and discovery reform that went into effect January 1st, so we're really new to it, but both systems are up and running. Our district attorney talked about the changes he'd made in his office and in working with the police agencies to process information faster. And I think there was some discussion at our last meeting about how we had historically low numbers on December 31st in our jail. Some of that was due, we were at 39 to remind everybody, some of that was due to prep for bail reform, that there had been a thorough review. Our numbers continue to be low in any event. And that's the report.
Right. Any questions for Rich? All right. Thank you very much, Rich. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you very much. We have not had a meeting since our last legislature meeting. I would like to let everyone know that there are two resolutions that will go in front of NYSAC. The first one is resolution in support of maintaining or increasing funding levels for local public health programs. I'm also going to send the email from NYSAC to everyone so that if you have comments, feel free to let us know. I can't imagine that anyone would be against having some more funding for our local health programs. The second one is protecting New York State's public water supply from harmful contaminants by increasing funding to county drinking water enhancement grants. I think two really good, solid resolutions. And again, I will send those to everyone. Feel free to give us comment. Anna Kellis is also on that standing committee. And our next meeting is February 7th at 9 a.m., and we have a pretty light agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Shauna? Seeing none. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
F and I met January 16th, and we have, as a result of that meeting, two resolutions that were on the consent agenda this evening. Little side note, customs building at the airport is approximately 85% done and expected to be done on time in the spring. In addition to that, there was some transfers, budget adjustments and transfers within the highway department did put about $32,200 into SALT versus whatever program the money was attached to previously. And we had a small discussion about the Freeze Road Bridge. Unfortunately, there was a town meeting at 15th that I was unable to attend, so I don't know if Martha got there or not, but or Mike, either one.
You want to hear? Yeah. there was a presentation, and we had the direct reports meetings so just before, so Mike and I got there a little after the beginning of the meeting, but there was there were some report outs by the engineers and by DOT and the town. There was a lot. There were about 45 people there from the public, and really a lot of a lot of dissatisfaction with the options that the town is considering, and the fact that all the comments that they've made so far have not. They haven't got any answers. You know, people have been writing letters and putting in comments as they've been asked to do, and they haven't gotten any responses back from engineers or the town or anybody. So the town has asked for another round of comments to be, like, people should send comments by this coming Friday to the town board. It's a Bambi Avery. People are doing that. They just feel like they're not getting anything back. So it's not, and it doesn't, feels like kind of going to a black hole. So I think it's really quite unsettled, very, very unsettled at the town level.
Okay, thank you. That's my report, Mike. That's
all right. Thank you very much, Dave. So that's all our committees. Individual member file resolutions. We don't have any of those. Minutes of the previous meeting, January 7th, 2020. Anna. Amanda.
No, I was just looking.
Oh, Oh, you were moving it. Okay, I thought you guys had something to say. So moved by Anna, seconded by Amanda. Anyone have commentary? Seeing none. All those in favor of the minutes? All those opposed? Passes unanimously. All right. Unfinished business? Seeing none. We're just going to... All right. Unfinished business. I want to say something before we get here. Well, not before we get here. Something to the public. While it may seem, you know, that the county is in flux right now over this, I'm going to read you a little thing. Coronavirus. I sent this to Frank earlier, as Jason mentioned. We are, Mike. We sent out notice to local health care providers last week and today to be aware of symptoms and to review travel histories. We have also been in contact with Cornell Health, and they are monitoring as well. Thanks, Frank. Did not ask Frank's permission to read that email, but, you know, what was in there, right? But that should be reassuring to people that your departments are running fine. They are up to date on things that actually could kill you. And we are looking at those things. And I just wanted to read that because it's important that, you know, the bureaucracy is really, while people complain about bureaucrats and things, they actually do make the government run. And in this instance, too, to protect you from life endangering things.
It's the deep state, Mike.
Yes. Well, we are not going to go into that, but yes, we have a nice bureaucracy. We have very good departments, and they do address concerns that are in front of this legislature. So as for the making of committees, listen, that is the chair's job. My job, though, as temporary chair, is to not exacerbate any strife. So that is not my intent, to exacerbate strife within this body. I think the committees are fine as they are. I'm going to let them go as they are. But there are two things. Martha, how long have you been a legislator?
18 years.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit her on the bench. So you guys should know that. I'm going to talk to her probably after this meeting or maybe tomorrow about what she envisions her role over the next 2 weeks is. I'm pretty happy with what she's doing right now. To be frank, I don't think there's really anybody else that could do what you're doing right now, getting prepared for this NYSAC conference, and I really do appreciate that. You make my job easier, and I like that in general, people that make my life easier. And I think our lobbying effort is a solid one. You update me a lot about it. I think you're meeting with people that I wouldn't have access to and a lot of people wouldn't have access to. So I really do appreciate that. And I know that, frankly, it's okay that you haven't been on a committee so far, because that has been kind of the focus. And I do see that as being important. So I just wanted to let you know that. But I wanted everybody to know, we're going to have to, you know, she is not on a committee right now, and we need to address that. And also there are some things that we need to go to. And I'm more than happy to go to those. I'm going to ask Kathy, and what we're going to go through is what things actually have to have people at them. There aren't too many of them, but if there's a hole, then it's kind of my job to fill that hole temporarily until everybody makes a decision here. With that in mind, this is a decision that this body, I believe, should make. And if there is folks holding out for our county clerk to make the decision for us. Listen, I love our county clerk. She's a constituent of mine. I'm pretty happy with the work she does. I still feel that it's our job to pick who the leadership's going to be. I don't know where we go with from there, and we're going to find out right now about a vote. So I do hope that this is all settled up eventually. I mean, it will be one way or another. But I do want to reassure the public, too, that we... things are well in hand. We are doing what we are supposed to do. Again, democracy is messy. But in the end, that messiness is better than anything else going on in the world. We have the best system around. Even today, I think that this system is the best one around. So with that, we are going to move to the election of the chairman of the Tompkins County Legislature. Do I have candidates for that chairmanship?
Chairpersonship.
Thank you. Chairpersonship.
Are you asking for nominations?
I'm asking for nominations from the floor. Dan.
I would like to nominate Mike Lane for chair of the legislature.
Okay, we have Mike Lane. I have a second from Henry. Thank you very much. Do I have any more nominations for chairperson of the Tompkins County Legislature?
Yes.
Yes, Leslie.
I actually, I'm going to nominate
Anna Kellis for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. And I'm not going to make any long speeches, but I will ditto everything that was said at the last meeting.
Thank you very much, Lesen. Do I have a second? A second from Glenn. All right. Moving on to the vote. Or is there discussion? Seeing no discussion. All right. All those in favor of Mike Lane being chairperson of the Tompkins County Legislature for 2020, please raise your hands. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I see 7 votes. All those, do we do opposed? Yes, we do. Of all those, no, we don't do opposed. We just do the vote. Thank you, Amanda. All those in favor of Anna Kellis being chairperson of the Tompkins County Legislature for 2020. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's still a deadlock, 7-7. Does anybody want a recess on this? I see no motion for a recess. Obviously, our county attorney, he gave some guidance last time about the vice chair. I'm going to go with that guidance since he is not here. Yes, Deborah.
I have a motion.
Okay.
When this came up several weeks ago, many of us Democrats had wanted Leslin to serve as temporary chair, but Leslin was ill. And so we agreed to have Mike be the temporary chair. But as much as I enjoy your very humorous and bright way of conducting a meeting, this is not personal, but you know, I've been contacted by several people in the Democratic community here in Tompkins County, as well as constituents who said, why on earth do we have a Republican serving in a chair position? And it, honestly, I don't think anybody expected that you would be quite as long-serving and energetic and engaged as you have been. And since this bids fair to continue, I would like to move to reconsider our appointment of Mr. Sigler as temporary chair.
Well, since that is a motion from the floor, it needs a second. So, Annie, you're a second of that. And you need 10 votes.
I have to ask.
Adding to the agenda.
I have to ask if that.
No, it's not reconsidered.
No. Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark. I don't.
Are you guys? You're checking the rules.
To reconsider of a motion, but the motion's already been voted on and passed. I'm saying I think you need 10 votes to do that.
Well,
but, no, you but need 10 points to add a resolution, not 10 points to make a motion.
No, this is to reconsider a vote, and I think there's a rule about you.
Same day.
No, or the next meeting.
No,
and it has to be someone who voted in favor of the original motion, which we all did.
Okay. So, yes, then.
I'm trying to think if I'm speaking for others or just myself. I guess I'll speak for myself. I'm concerned that the temporary chair would do something that is more permanent. Nothing here is permanent, but if the temporary chair were to make an appointment that were to last all year, in my opinion, that would be crossing a line that the temporary chair should not be crossing.
Okay.
So I guess I wanted to ask you directly. You just said you would keep committees the same.
Yes.
So that's a temporary, that's not a permanent, that's not a year-long appointment.
There are some openings, and you were going to read them, and then you veered off from that. Like, for instance,
the only one I've heard of so far is the TCAD board.
TCAD.
TCAD board. I'm sorry. Yes.
So I want to ask you directly: are you suggesting that if you stayed in the role of temporary chair, that you would make that appointment?
Well, I would seek the body's wisdom. Does anybody want to serve in that? I would send that out.
I guess my question is,
you have to make an appointment eventually, Dan, I would think, to something.
Well, we know
we can wait till this solves itself. I don't really care.
That's my question is, is it your intention to make any appointments that would last all year, or are you willing to say, I'm not going to make any appointments that will last?
I can make that commitment not to make any appointments until this resolves itself. Yes, Martha, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I can make that commitment.
Okay, thank you.
So, folks, no, I just checked my calendar and said, okay, Mike, here are all the things that I went to because I was chair.
Yes.
And that included being on the TCAD board. So there's a meeting Thursday, and Mike's going to go. There's a TCOG meeting, and Mike's going to go. And I told Anna and Mike Lane also that it was happening, or I forwarded the agenda. So I told Heather McDaniel at TCAD that, so we got this thing, okay, if Mike comes, right? And she said, great. I think it's understood that as soon as there's a chair, that person picks up those kinds of meetings. So were you thinking of appointing somebody to TCAD's board?
I'm not now.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think there's any.
It has been a question that has come up from members of the community that we don't have representation right now on certain things.
Okay, so.
That's troublesome to
me. Unless I've missed anything I went to because I was chair, I handed those off to you, and you've been going to them, and if you can't get there, you should find somebody else.
Right.
So we're being represented, and as far as it was very nice what you said about my not being on the bench, and I went to the peak meeting today to listen to the report about the forestry, and Deborah was very nice about letting me be at the table and making comments. So I don't mind doing that for a while. Jason sent out a note about the committee, about the retreat, and talking about committee goals, et cetera. Since those kind of conversations are, I think, consensus conversations, I feel like I can go and participate to the committees I'm interested in.
Okay.
So personally, I don't, I'm okay.
Right.
I'll go to what I want to go to, but we have to understand, and staff has to understand, we're not likely to have the new committees and new schedule until March this year.
Okay.
So I don't know how else to that's not likely to happen. So, clearly if nothing happens by our February meeting, Maureen solves that problem, and we move ahead. But the committees aren't going to get established till March, I would think. Right?
If that's what everybody's comfortable with, and that's what I'm hearing that most, if there was a vote on that, I think that would be the vote. Yes, Rich, I'm sorry.
Are you done? That was just.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I would say the sense in the room seems to be don't make appointments, except I would say, unless directed by the legislature, that if there's an appointment to be made, tell us that we've got a gap, and if we can come to agreement on it, we should. And fill it, but
sure.
Just bring it to us.
That's a great way forward. So that's what we'll do. Yes, Kathy.
Also, many of these appointments that you're referencing require legislature approval. For example, the TCCOG appointment is done by resolution and requires legislature approval. So,
okay.
What's the status of the IDA?
That's done by resolution as well.
All right. Yes, Martha.
I think those members continue until replaced. I just want to say, when I joined this board 18 years ago, I was struck by how little of our business had anything to do with what party you're in. And I continue to feel that way. It's mostly common sense, and that's why most of our resolutions are unanimous. That's why we do a lot of stuff by consensus. And I'm sorry that our public maybe seems to be disappointed that we're doing that. And I just got to say, Mike, I think you've been doing a great job, and I've been pleased with how engaged you've been. I've been pleased that you've included people. I sent an email to a subset of people today about how you really kind of made me feel sheepish about my lack of communication to the rest of the body over the last 2 years, and I should have been doing more. And I, you know, thanks for showing a really positive way forward on this. So I think we can easily tell our constituents or anybody else who asks that we'll sort this out and happily the partisan divide that is all around us in the rest of the country, yeah, it flashes sometimes, thanks to Mike in particular, but usually it's really about common sense and working together. Thank you, Mike, for what you're doing.
No problem. And to actually thank somebody else, you can thank Pat Pryor, who beat me by 7 votes. But why did she beat me? She communicated better with my community, and I keep up going to talk to the town every week, or every time they have a meeting, I go and I give them my county report, and that's in large part because of her, because she did that, and they appreciated that. So it all goes back to someplace else, generally. So. All right, well, we have a motion on the floor. Lesland, are you accepting that nomination to be temporary chair?
This was not a nomination. This was simply a motion to reconsider.
Oh, reconsider. Okay. Sorry. Motion to reconsider. That's on the floor. It has a second. All those in favor of the motion to reconsider, unless if anybody have anything else to say on this matter. All right. Yes, Rich.
I'm afraid we might be making things more complicated rather than less through that. I mean, at least we have an equilibrium of sorts. Then I think we would be opening it up to a secondary, perhaps, dispute over who would be the temporary chair. And I'm not sure that benefits us.
I guess this is just a general question. It seems that there was a more general concern about making appointments. If that's off the table, does that change the conversation? That's a general question. Was that the crux of the concern?
Well, not from my perspective. And again, this isn't personal, and it isn't a comment on the job that Mike's doing. It's a reaction to things that I've heard from several people.
Yes.
This is not a permanent decision.
This motion may well fail, but I feel obligated to honor what I've heard.
Yes, Annie.
For me, it's not about what the community thinks about it. Although I honor that you that's your. That's what appeals to you to bring this forward. And I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just saying my aspect, or for me thinking about it, was that we thought, at least I'll speak to me. For myself, I thought that that was going to be a position for one meeting, maybe two. And it looks like, in all likelihood, it's going to be a little longer. And and I would vote for Lesland now to be the temporary chair. And it's simple as that.
Are you planning on going to NYSAC now?
No.
Oh.
No, we've got a good team.
What?
We have a good team going to NYSAC. I don't think I need to go. Yes.
I guess I would ask if Leslin is interested in this nomination.
Okay. Sure, we can just vote. I'll just have one last thing to say. Like I said, if the vote goes through, that's fine.
Just a question?
Yeah.
So what is it exactly that's on the table that we're reconsidering?
Reconsidering the
appointment of Mike Sigler as temporary chair. This is total technicality. If we are voting for, then we are re-bringing up the vote on Mike Sigler.
Right.
Temporary chair.
Of course. Yeah.
And how many people do we need to be successful?
Eight.
Right. Eight?
That's correct.
Eight. Majority.
Yeah, that's majority.
Majority. Well,
just that. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm going to oppose it because I understand the impetus and the public's confusion, I guess, or whatever, but I think the issue of we got enough confusion going on. I just for the sake of 2 weeks, I don't want to upend this again. So I'm not going to support it.
Call the question.
The question has been called. All those in favor of calling the question? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So the question has been called. So all those in favor of, so we're sending
reconsidering
the appointment of Mike Sigler as temporary chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed to reconsidering the, right? All those opposed to reconsidering the appointment of Mike Sigler as temporary chair. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's a mixed up.
7, 7.
Yeah, so it fails.
Okay.
Let the record show it's a different 7-7.
But it was 7-7.
The record doesn't have to show that.
So now I've written a speech for this. No. Thank you, actually. Listen, I just want this body to move forward. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done, not work by me on that end, thankfully. like I said before, I'll serve in the best capacity I can. I want to thank Dan for talking to me earlier. Dan, nothing's going to change. So we'll just keep things the way they are. And if there's a problem that needs the body, I'll do the same thing I've been doing every week. I'm going to give you an update, and you guys can weigh in on it, and we'll move ahead from there. So I'm not overly concerned about that. But it'll be fine. Everything will be fine. So I'm going to move for adjournment. Oh, well, we got more? What do we got?
I was just going to say, should we only voted one time. Should we vote again for fun?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Can I make the motion to adjourn? Do I have a second? Henry. We'll take Henry as our second. All those in favor of adjournment, please say aye or raise your hand, please. Or please say, just say yes. Aye. Anybody opposed? We are adjourned.
You had multiple people opposed.
Opposed to adjourn. So we have 1, 2, 3. Those are opposed.
There was this uproar out in Greenville because they thought suddenly they were going to have.